wanted to bring all DDGs to this meeting, but Mrs. Chebeka, for example, cannot make it on account that we've developed a very intensive program for school monitoring in Limpopo and Eastern Cape, which is being implemented this week, and therefore she couldn't make it. She was very deep in Eastern Cape and couldn't get here. We then felt that continued deployment would be more productive. However, a contribution would be taken care of by others present at the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. And your minister and your deputy minister.
Apologies from our minister and deputy minister. I'm just checking with Llewellyn James, in fact, But indeed, our apologies from Minister and Deputy Minister. And I did forget, Mr. Manager just reminded me that Ms. Carlos lost her father, and apologies from her as well.
Thanks a lot, because I think the apology that my whip received, that's why I asked, was that they are in a cabinet with so they both do that at the moment. And then when it comes to Mrs. Carlos, I think you have to carry over our sympathies to her, and Llewellyn, you have just get the details and send lift up sympathies to Mrs. Carlos. Thank you. We'd like to know who's going to start with the report, teacher.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, and thank you again for the opportunity for this meeting. And as you know, it's a standard part of the calendar where we have to account for different quarters. In terms of the new approach, which is the outcomes-based approach, in terms of this approach, clear indicators have been identified, and we report specifically in terms of the progress in relation to these indicators and whatever challenges there might be and how we deal with those. These quarterly reports are mirrored in the cabinet. They follow a very particular format, and the cabinet engages with these indicators to assess progress based on the outcomes approach across the government. The AG as well verifies these performance indicators and performance information. All of these things come together to improve accountability. However, Honourable Chairperson, let me make the point that I always make when we present this report, is that we are sitting with the challenge that even though these indicators derive from the delivery agreement, they relate very much out of necessity to the vote that's appropriated to the DDU. And as you're well aware, that vote from the minor part of the expenditure sector, and consequently most of what goes on in the sector cannot be reported on in this report. Should we need to engage with the sectoral indicators, then we need to have a separate process to deal with that when we look at the sector's approach. But to repeat, that this particular quarterly report is focusing on the department's vote itself. Our approach to the presentation, Honourable Chair, is to ask Ms. Nuga Deliwe, sitting to my left, to do the first part, which is the non-financial performance indicator part. She will be followed by the CFO, sitting towards my right, who will deal with the financial part. That's for the first part of the quarterly, that's for the quarterly report. We've also been asked to do a presentation today on exam readiness, and you will guide us on when we do that, you know, whether we have discussion after this one, and then the presentation of when we present both and have discussion. But you will guide us on that, Honourable Chairperson. Let me then hand over to you, Honourable Chairperson. Ms. Nuga Deliwe, next in line.
Fine. I think for the presentation, let us give it a half an hour.
Okay.
We'll be able to manage it that way. Then we have an hour for questions. We have a whole hour to question and to get answers from you. Because we thought of giving it 1.5 hours. Then, of course, we thought when it comes to examination, we'll do it within 1.5 hours. So we're back in order.
Perfect.
Thank you.
As Gigi mentioned, this is really reflecting on the first quarter report, the first quarter of 2012-13. And what I will do in this particular presentation is take the presentation as read, highlight a few things as we go along, if that's acceptable.
In order, member?
Yep. Thank you. Thank you very much. Basically, the context is of the $16 billion allocated to the DDE. The main challenge during the period was in connection with Section 100 administration, two provinces particularly in terms of the DDE's activities to restore stability and service delivery in those provinces, as well as to maintain the levels of service delivery in the other provinces. We had the NSC, the National Senior Certificate Supplementary Exams results completed in the first quarter of the year, and that boosted the overall pass rate in this particular quarter under review. We also had the 94 School for Project for Madiba event and partnerships around different aspects of provision, clearly related to infrastructure and curriculum support in these schools. So more than 64,000 of our most needy learners in the system benefited directly. In addition, district director, the quarterly meetings that the minister had with district directors was held on the 19th of April to supplement, obviously, reflecting on what the SDP election process, mainly, amongst other things. So this report will reflect on five programs 1 to 5, as indicated on slide 6, administration, curriculum policy, support and monitoring, teachers, education, human resources, and institutional development, planning and educational enrichment services, five programs of the DDE. The targets in the annual performance plan are split up into quarterly targets, about just under 20% quarterly targets, 78% annual targets. Because of the nature of education and because of the nature of the most of the assessment of learner performance and achievement, but also the indicators of quality in the system, the majority of our targets aligns to the sector planning target, 78% of them were annual targets. So when we speak about progress, we speak against these different targets, as well as 4%, which are biannual targets of the total 51 indicators in annual performance plan. So this report provides a little bit of more detail, in addition to obviously the indicators that have been highlighted in the annual performance plan. I'll start with Program 1 fairly quickly. This consists of the Ministry, the Department of Management, Corporate Services, CFO's Office, Internal Audit and Risk Management, Office Accommodation. And those are the strategic objectives of this particular program. The highlights and achievements during the first quarter was really in terms of the advertised and filled appointments, key posts of Deputy Director General, two DDG posts in this were filled during this quarter, and extensive amount of training for about 20% of the officials in the DDG. Quite a lot of activity in terms of international relations and multilateral affairs, both in the SADC region but also further afield in Cuba, particularly in terms of the exchange program for tutors in fields of math, science, and technology, which are skills areas in our sector. The OECD has been twice this year on a fact-finding mission in preparation for a survey of a report, if you like, on economics and education and human resource development in South Africa for 2012. Among the departments that they visited with National Treasury, ourselves, but also rural development, economic development. So quite a large delegation was received, and a lot of information and data was provided to this set of researchers. The DBE and USAID embarked on appointing service providers with school capacity and innovation program, and we're hoping that in the coming quarters we can report more substantively on the outputs of this particular program. and various delegations, including the Pakistani delegation, boosted just in terms of their understanding of the basic education sector. We also had the first meeting of the South African National Commission for UNESCO on the 11th of April, with various line functions involved in that, as well as the release of the UNESCO, the compilation of the UNESCO National Report on Adult Learning and Education. Obviously, the Karikude colleagues were intrinsically and intimately involved in this particular process, as well as colleagues from all the other parts of the department. In terms of media liaison, quite a lot of work in this quarter, ranging from the National Teacher Awards, articles on the National Teacher Awards and teacher policy in general, right through to in-government communications, safety in education, bullying at schools, and road safety pamphlets were developed for external publication, but also distribution through communities, schools, and other sisters, and where the department is no longer of the strength. There's also a communication strategy developed for the 94th project for Madiba, as well as for ANA 2012. And I'm sure that the colleagues in the exam section will share a little bit more about that in detail. The integrated school health program, also a lot of work around that in terms of the implementation and the detail of how it will roll out, as well as the Karikude literacy campaign. So the detail of program one output are as follows, and I'll just direct honorable members and honorable chairperson to the progress column on the right-hand side of your slide, each of these indicators. So I've spoken a bit about the internship, about the training opportunities in the department, but also there are a lot of interns appointed, 69 of them in the quarter. And what we do is we monitor them to make sure that they stay, but also that they gain valuable experience, not just in basic administration, but also in some of the technical areas across the department, so research, planning, but also the substantive work around the programmatic function. We have annual targets related to the completion of the employment outcomes of interns who completed the internship program, not just within the department, but also outside the department. So the internship program is meant to expose people to the skills that they can use, that they can use for mobility within but also outside in other government departments and even in the broader labor market. I've spoken about the training and the country engagement. So there have been two reports on the country engagement that have been produced, as well as the legal cases instituted against the sector by type and project. So that report has been compiled, it's available, and it can be forwarded if accepted. Program 2 then is really the nub of what we're about, curriculum policy support and monitoring, and it comprises sub-programs, curriculum policy support and monitoring, implementation and monitoring, policy enhancement programs, and the literacy project. These are the strategic objectives, ranging from e-education through to curriculum enhancement improvement, through to promoting access to learning materials, learning and teaching support materials, library and media resource support, pre-grade one education, as well as the special needs support amongst learners. Just the highlights and achievements of this particular program. Subject advisors for all subjects from all provinces have been orientated to cap on the breakdown in terms of the participation and the reach, if you like, of the provincial and national task teams are articulated in this particular slide for both the GET and the FET scale. So we're talking about 3,035 in terms of provincial activities and efforts nationally, 968 for the general education and training plans, and about 300, just under 300 in terms of the national task team orientation activities. This is detailed really about the orientation and when it happens, etc. And the important thing is about what the union representatives representing from academic institutions and special schools understand now the changes brought on by the CAP, where they are, where appropriate, and how they can be mediated in terms of the teaching work and teaching. There's also been a lot of work in the foundation phase, just consolidate a lot of the expansion in the foundation phase through DVDs and work practice, foundations for learning, and strengthening teacher development, teacher support, if like in that area. A handbook on how to teach numeracy in the early grades was revised and aligned to CAP and will be made available on Sutong and sent electronically to all district offices for use in their support of teachers. And what we're going to be doing in future in the quarterly engagement with the minister is to assess how well these things are being used and the level of the perceptions of teachers and districts in terms of the support that's provided through this particular handbook. The plan for the support of teaching and assessment in multi-grade schools have been developed, and 124 teachers in the quarter under review were trained on teaching and assessment in multi-grade schools. We know that this is a small number, but in the quarter under review, this is really the amount of work that was done in terms of multi-grade teaching. So the orientation of CAP focused extensively on district support for multi-grade teaching, as well as classroom support of the teachers themselves. Highlights and achievements also included strengthening assessment in grades R to 9. All schools have been provided with exemplar assessment items for all subjects for grade 9, which is the new grade to be covered in the annual national assessment. And as DG school, DGG, is in provinces, and other senior officials have been in provinces to assess really the use of these, the utility of these, but also the application of these exemplars. And the reports that we're getting from the ground are very positive and very, very, very encouraging. Curriculum coverage, monitoring curriculum coverage has taken place during May 2012. Seven provinces were visited in the period under review to determine the use of policy documents in respect of curriculum use and also the application of these documents. In terms of early childhood development, the draft policy framework has been finalized to be released as a gazette for public comment in the period under review. In addition, grade R workbook for 2013 has been allied to CAP and is currently being printed for distribution in the new financial year, in the new, academic year. In terms of inclusive education, the review of all phases of CAP will finalize as part of the development of the South African Sign Language curriculum and the screening, identification, assessment and support strategies for the identification of barriers to learning has also been finalized in the first quarter of the financial year. In terms of ICT training, this is a summary of training that's happened in different provinces provided by service providers of different types across the country. Roughly 8,000 schools have been trained in different aspects of ICT application and e-learning across the country. Two provincial ICT resource centers were completed in May and June respectively, and the following materials have been made available on the Tutong portal. So in addition to these, obviously the ones that I talked about, the name of ECD will also be added to this once they're finalized, but this is basically what's happened. So there's a lot of content, CAP information, the workbooks have been loaded, as well as training material. And as other things come on board, like the Braille and other materials, they will be loaded into Tutong as soon as they've been finalized, refined, etc. The National Catalogue for Textbooks, the Honourable Members and Honourable Chairperson, this particular committee has received extensive reports in this particular area. The catalog for this year was released on actually early. The provinces have been able to begin their textbook procurement process. In addition, there's been a lot of work in terms of central procurement, integrated procurement, and just writing, if you like, policy compliance, and improving policy compliance in the area of provincial distribution, supply chain, etc. So there's a lot of work and activity related to monitoring procurement and delivery to schools, that, as you're aware, and you've received a report on. In terms of the learning and teaching support materials, a model has been finalized and developed and submitted for comment on costing of core LGSM per grade aligned to the minimum school size that's involved in the sector plan, action plan, 2014, and a textbook retention system policy being completed as part of the overall LTSM policy in the sector. Additional copies of the workbook were distributed to district offices just to fill in any gaps in terms of shortages. And data for printing and distribution of workbooks in 2013 is being refined and submitted to provinces for verification as we speak. The Program 2 output then, the detail of Program 2 output. The performance indicators on the left-hand side of your slide and the progress, if you like, against the target for 2012-13 reflected on the right-hand side. First quarter targets, where they are applicable, are in the middle column, the middle numerical column. So basically the slide just indicates what I have spoken about earlier, except for work related to the partnership with the Sasol and Zalo Foundation in terms of the technology workbook, natural science and technology workbook, grade 4 to 6, aligning with CAP. The development of WorldCat new workbook is 49% complete, as been planned. This next slide speaks to some of the work, the progress that I've highlighted already in terms of multi-grade teaching. And the last three indicators really speak to learner performance that we'll only be able to report on after the ANA is completed on September 18th, later this year. Similarly, this first indicator on grade 6 learners performing in math, as well as grade 9 learner performance. So very quickly then, the matrix pass rates and targets indicated there. The progress that there has been in relation to matrix has been around just preparation for matrix, the diagnostic reports, the item analysis that's been shared, the exemplars that have been provided to provinces, but also the rigorous monitoring of the business process related to matrix in provinces has really been tightened up this year, to the point where we are assured that the quality of the process, for all the processes that feed into the different aspects of matrix, whether it's marking or moderation or just collection and distribution, the logistics of it, we are sure in all provinces there's a lot more understanding and a lot more adherence to the policy around these areas. And what we are finding also is that we're able to draw on some of that institutional memory and institutional understanding of what should happen within to apply to the ANA, particularly in terms of grade 9, the new assessment that's coming on track this year. Slide 31 now just talks about the percentage of schools having access to library information services. Currently, we have 21% of schools which have access to a functional library. We also have schools which have mobile library cabinets and schools which have access to mobile buses, library buses, and the classroom reading collection in addition to those 21%. So 1 in 5, 21% would be about 5,000 schools in the country. In addition, there's their media resources that have been delivered to the schools through different modalities. We are in, within this quarter, we finalized the draft survey form to more clearly and more carefully specify exactly what's in school, in what way, the kinds of access that learners have to different library services models, so that we are able to then incrementally and developmentally then address a lot of these shortages and these backlogs. But the target for 2012-13 is 60%, and that is an annual target. We'll be in quarter two more clearly on the details of the different types of library and media resources available at school level. Percentage of learners in the textbook for each subject. The target for the 86-2012-13 is 85%. We have done a lot of work on the national catalogue, and we are currently doing an evaluation of textbook and workbook use particularly, and textbooks which are on the national catalogue in school, and we are going to the field in the next month in this particular sample survey. The number of learners who have received workbooks, just over 11 million in the first quarter of learner workbooks were delivered in the first quarter of this year, and supplemented by just under around 8% of on top of that for shortages, as I mentioned earlier. So we have managed to expand the Karikude program, but what we've had in this particular quarter have been challenges around capturing the number of learners, and in quarter two we'll have a better sense of audited learning enrollment details. But the indications are we're on track in terms of expansion and enrollment and our targets. Similarly, we have had a minority of cases where completion has been a problem. So we've done a lot of advocacy work, Karikude monitoring and coordinators have been doing a lot of site visits to motivate learners to complete the program. So our percentage of learners completing the Karikude program, the target for the year is 83%, but in quarter two we'll have a better idea based on the learner information that we receive. We get into the database how the completion rate for people that are enrolled and retained on the program. The district offices and district and schools with teachers trained on screening, identification, assessment, and support. The targets are 50 and 100. Progress has been related to policy, a lot of policy work. And what we are really identifying in quarter two, particularly in relation to the labor intensiveness of the work, this particular work is a concerted effort to consolidate the policy work that's been in this area and to move into more implementation. But the DDG responsible for that will give a little bit more detail, I'm sure. And a lot of work in relation to the expansion of ECD, as I've mentioned, early childhood development. The target for 2012-13 was 69% of grade 1 learners who have received formal grade R education in school, and as of the General Household Survey of 2011, we have an estimate of 83% of all grade 1 learners in school have actually received formal grade R education. That's a positive thing for us. We're within that particular MDG for the participation of learners in grade R, we will achieve, and this is a really very strong, a positive thing for the education system, because it has a lot of advantages downstream in terms of learner performance at higher grades and also success on completion rates. Program 3 speaks to teaching, teachers, human resources in the education, basic education sector, institutional development, schools of learning bodies, and other curriculum and professional development and such areas. The strategic objectives, including the establishment of the National Institute for Curriculum and Professional Development, improving teacher recruitment, supply, utilization, management, and accountability, improving training and subject knowledge materials, but also the improvement of accountability mechanisms at parent and community level in support of schools, including schools of learning bodies, etc., as well as an improvement really in the district, in how the district supports schools to improve learner performance. In summary, that's basically the frame of activity, if you like, of this particular branch is through the teacher development plan, the integrated strategic teacher development plan, which was agreed in 2009 and which forms the basis of most of the reporting that's in this particular branch. In terms of IQMS, a lot of work has been done in IQMS. About just under 10% of schools in the country were visited by external IQMS moderators in the first quarter, including 1,484 follow-up visits to these schools. So this is a provincial breakdown of the first-time visits, the follow-up visits, and then classroom observation in a third of these schools. So quite extensive activity, quite a lot of coverage, and very, very heartening what's been picked up and how that is being fed back into the system at school level, but also at district level. So quite a lot of work in that area, particularly in terms of curriculum management support, teacher support, etc. So this really has been a very positive. It's a really, really, really valued part of the department's work. And then the finalization of a revised instrument for teacher performance appraisal. By the end of the first quarter, feedback was still being awaited from key unions and positions in terms of the draft QMS document. In terms of whole school evaluation supervisors in provinces visited and evaluated 144 schools in 5 provinces, and those are the 5 provinces mentioned. And in terms of, by the end of the first quarter of the year, the academic year, by the end of March 2012, these are the number of qualified teachers that entered the profession. What we'll be doing in the next quarter is to also, per province, quantify the number of qualified teachers, the teachers who left the profession, so that we can get a sense of what the class has been and what the kind of dynamics there are, flows there are in and out of the profession. So this is one of the things that within the department we are strengthening and are monitoring on, but also we're getting a lot more detail and a lot more qualitative information during our monitoring visits on exactly how what happens in terms of teacher new recruits to teaching, but also, so these are new recruits who are aged under 30, rather than new recruits, number of qualified teachers entering the profession in general. So that's in the first quarter of the academic year. So you divide that by 3 and have 1,200 roughly entering every month. A memorandum of understanding for teacher collaboration was signed off, and CAP collaboration with KZN and Mpumalanga was concluded to consolidate the work that's been done in the previous quarters since the end of 2011. Plans were received from 7 provincial education departments in terms of teacher development for the 2012-13 period, and reports for the first quarter have not been concluded due to late submission by provincial education departments. So by the end of the next quarter, we would have a lot more detail in terms of provincial plans according to the framework. In respect of initial teacher education, a lot of advocacy work around from the Ishaka, the information guides for potential recruits have been delivered, have been distributed, printed for distribution to academic institutions and provincial education departments. And to improve the matching of Funza Lushaka graduates, but also to just to improve their absorption into the teaching service, a district-based recruitment approach has been approved for implementation in the sector. The selection process for qualifying bursars was completed, and just under 12,000 students were identified to receive the bursary at the following institutions. In the quarter under review. So that's the split between institutions. In slide number 44. In terms of school governance, the capacity development guide for training of school governing bodies has been approved, and it's anticipated it will commence in June, and it will go on, if you like, for the entire term of the office of the school governing body. What the district, in terms of district development, policy on the responsibilities and roles of education districts was published for public comment, and the comments are being refined. The task team has been established to consider the comments and incorporate them where appropriate into the draft policy. A lot of focus was given to the district improvement planning to ensure that all districts cover prioritized area in their support to students, but also to consolidate the different types of planning within the sector, academic, curriculum related, as well as other sorts of planning closer to the school. The district improvement plans were collected, they were analyzed, feedback provided to the district, but clearly what has emerged is the use of different formats and different types of planning plans in different parts of the country, and we through the interaction with the district quarterly, we'll be proposing a suggested template as a minimum standard to improve future plans that speaks to the learner performance and support for that. Thank you. Okay, so I've spoken a lot about those. I will go very quickly then into program 4, which is, it speaks to planning, information and assessment, exams, financial and fiscal planning, infrastructure, the NIDU. Highlights and achievements, support visits, I've mentioned, the senior certificate supplementaries were completed and analyzed and released, and moderators have been deployed to each of the provincial education departments to evaluate the quality and standard of tasks that feed into the rest of the assessment system in the I won't go into this in detail because I'm sure the colleagues will cover that in the exam section. In terms of infrastructure, all provincial education departments have received their first and second transfer on the education infrastructure grant for the 2012-13 financial year. Monitoring and reporting visits have been commenced in June with Eastern Cape through to Northwest visited. I'll just go very, very quickly. And then the detail of the province, if you like, on the school infrastructure backlog grant included in here. Okay. I've spoken a little bit about the planning, delivery, and oversight unit and some of the work that they've been doing in provinces. And that slide 59 just summarizes some of it. slide 61 onwards then just speaks to really the detail of what is included in this slide. Okay. Okay. slide 65, we have a lot of annual targets related to participation, enrollment, and these really are a lot of the information that we're receiving on progress in relation to these from the General Household Survey, which is carried out by the Statistics of Africa. But there's progress in this particular area. Program 5, then, Educational Enrichment Services, includes care and support in schools, partnerships with education, and implementation, monitoring, and reporting for budget, for budget, in general budget programs, sub-programs. And the highlights I've spoken a little bit about in the introduction, in terms of the integrated school health program, which was presented to HESCOM and approved for implementation. So implementation is happening now. It's being phased in all provinces, and screening of grade 1 learners is ongoing. The National School Nutrition Program, 4 provinces were visited in the quarter under review for the purposes of monitoring program implementation, but also support to district funds. And slide 69 then speaks to provincial funds in respect to the school nutrition program. In terms of social cohesion, community mobilization, and gender equity, a gender review in basic education report was finalized and approved. A moot court competition was held with encouraging participation, almost double the participation, and a partnership with the National Interfaith Council of South Africa and the South African SACC was finalized in promoting the Bill of Responsibility. The coral I said was scheduled and had taken place actually as we speak, as well as the national school in general. So there's details in slide 72 and 73 about the work of the particular program. And then the numbers, if you like, after that. Thank you very much.
Thanks for that, the CFO. Give me about half an hour. Next time. Yes, we've got this. Yes, we've got this.
Yes, Honorable Chair and Member. The following slides indicate the expenditure for the first quarter of the financial year. The total allocation for the department for the 2012-13 financial year amounts to 15.343 billion. And this is made up by transfer payments, which make up 11.971 billion. And the transfers are made to conditional grants, transfers to public entities, and other transfers. Now, the conditional grants, the department is responsible for 5 grants, NSNP, HIV/AIDS, Dinaledi, Technical Schools, and the EIG. And the transfers to public entities are mainly transfers for Funza Lushaka Bazari, which is made to the NSFAS, and the Umalusi transfer. And then the remainder of the budget, which amounts to 4.371 billion, is for compensation of employees, examiners and moderators, earmarked funds, specifically and exclusively appropriated, departmental operations and departmental projects. Now, the earmarked funds are made mainly by the workbook allocation, carrying the allocation and IQMS and the others. And then the specifically and exclusively appropriated is for the infrastructure backlog fund. And the expenditure for the department for the first quarter amounts to 4.140 billion. 3.875 billion is for expenditure. The expenditure is for the transfer payments. And they were made up as follows. Conditional grants, 3192. Transfers to public entities, 682 million. And other transfers, were 316,000 rand. The remainder of the expenditure, which is 255 million rand, was spent on the items listed on the slide. Now this expenditure is broken into this slide. The next slide shows the expenditure in the different programs. And the one with the lowest spending is program two, but this will be explained later in the presentation. And then this one just shows the expenditure per item. Compensation of employees, which was 21%, 21.47%, goods and services 7.72%, and transfers and subsidies are making the bulk of the expenditure, which is 32.37%, and payments for capital assets is 2.72%. This one is just showing a little bit more details of the items where it's showing the expenditure, with the highest being transfers to public entities at 95.60%. Maybe if I can explain this one. These transfers are mainly for Kunzalu Shaka, and the transfer is made once off. It's transferred to NSFAS for the Kunzalu Shaka bazaars, as I indicated earlier. And then the one at the bottom, the project, this one includes some of the projects that were included in the previous financial year, but we did not receive allocation for this year. So if we don't receive the rollovers, we have to make up for this fund in the current financial year. This slide is showing the details of the earmarked funds and the conditional grants. Now, one of the items that I was referring to is the curriculum review. This one, for instance, we have expenditure of 11.406 million. But we don't have an allocation for this. Now, this was allocated in the previous financial year, but for the current financial year, we did not receive an allocation. But we have applied for rollovers, because the reason we could not pay last financial year was because we received the invoice very late, in the last week of March, and we had to check the invoices and verify that the services were received. And then at the bottom there is the conditional grant. Now the amounts that are showing for expenditure there is the transfers that we have made so far to the provinces. It's not actual expenditure, but we do have information on the actual expenditure. And then this slide is just showing the transfers to the public entities and other transfers. Now most of these transfers, UNESCO idea and so on, they are normally made at the end of the year or around January, February. So this one will show expenditure later in the financial year. Now this, we are just showing the reasons for deviations, especially where there's a low expenditure. For program one, I mean, if we take if we're using a straight line method, we could have spent around 25%. So there is no significant spending on program one. For program two, the expenditures are a bit low because we haven't yet paid for the learner support material for the Kaributa learners. But it must be noted that the bulk of the Kaributa amount is for stipends that are paid to the volunteer educators. Now the classes only started in June, July. So expenditure will pick up in the coming months because the classes have started. And then with regard to the workbook, the artwork for the 2013 workbook has been revised in accordance with input from schools and specialists. And the printing will take place as soon as the process has been finalized. Program three, this one, the main reason that is showing a high expenditure is the one we also have a project under program three with a collaboration with the teacher union. The invoices there were also received late, so it's showing as if we overspent. But it's invoices from the last financial year. That's why it's so high. And then for program four, the under expenditure is due to the progress in respect of building of schools in the Eastern Cape, the school infrastructure backlog grant. This project is behind schedule due to unavailability of materials and supplies. However, good progress has been made with regard to the water and sanitation project in all provinces. And then the other area where that made expenditure to be low in this regard is the ANU, because it's now written in September. So the processes of printing and distribution started later than originally anticipated. But the payments will be made soon because, as you are all aware, the ANU will be taking place in this month. And then with regard to Program 5, there were no material variances in this program. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks a lot for the report. Members, do you think you have to do examination or ask questions? Because examinations are part of this report, too. How do you feel? Before I thank the person. Honourable? Fine, because I was just worried about examination, because we did Anna. We had a separate report already on Anna. We had a separate report on infrastructure. And we just waiting for examinations, and then we can ask questions, Dr. Collier. That gives us more time for questions. So there's quite a number of things I think that has to be clarified in the report. Thank you a lot. The report was very comprehensive.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and good afternoon to the Honourable Members, and thank you for this opportunity to present the state of readiness on the National Senior Certificate Exams. I think you would all agree with me that we are fast moving into the assessment and examination season. Incidentally, ANA is only 13 days away, and the first test will be written on the 18th of September, and in terms of the National Senior Certificate Exams, we have 47 days to go. So the countdown has started, and I'm sure the anxiety levels are also rising across the country in terms of preparation and readiness for this important annual event in the academic calendar. My presentation would look at these key areas, and I would try and very quickly go through key components of the examination cycle and how far we've progressed, but I would foreground my presentation by looking at the scope and size of this particular exam and how does it compare to previous examinations, and look at the monitoring approach, and finally give you some kind of a summation on how do we fare in terms of our preparations for the 2012 NSE exams. I think it's important, Honourable Members, for me to indicate that the examination system is a fast maturing system, and I think examinations in this country has enjoyed a high degree of success in terms of its administration, and I think there are possibly five factors that contribute to successful examinations in South Africa. And that is based on the fact that we have a sound legislative framework which has been tried and tested over the years. And I think strict compliance is possibly the rule of code and act in terms of examinations. People that work in examinations are accused of being too straitjacketed simply because they enforce compliance. I think we have very good provincial and national collaboration. And over the years, Honourable Members, I think we've developed an examinations culture. And examinations are highly respected in every district, in every school, in every community. And I think the introduction of nationally set question papers has certainly added strength and rigor to the development of a national examination system in this country. And when one looks at the concept of a national examination system, I think we've made tremendous progress in terms of reaching our goal, but I still think there's lots more work to be done in this particular area. But I think in examinations, we are continuously revising our policy, processes, and systems, and we are fast getting to a system which we can then refer to as being internationally comparable. When one talks about the examination cycle, Honorable Chair, there are four key pillars. And those four key pillars is firstly the assessment instrument or the question paper. That question paper must then be administered under specific conditions across the entire country. Then comes the important process of marking and moderation. And finally, to link up examinations with teaching and learning is the process of analyzing the data emanating from exams and providing appropriate feedback. And for me, that is possibly the most important aspect relating to examinations and assessment. And I think all of this is underpinned or will contribute to credible exams and assessment in the country. In terms of looking at this highly complicated and labor-intensive, very detailed process, we need to have an organizing framework. And the organizing framework that is utilized in exams and assessment is a very simple IPO model which looks at input, process, and output. But what I think we've done in the case of examinations and assessment is to clearly specify what are the inputs that are critical in terms of ensuring a successful exam. What are the processes, and obviously what then becomes the output. But what I think makes this different is the fact that for the inputs, we have clear norms and standards. In the case of the process, clear norms and standards. And also in terms of what is expected in terms of the output, there are clearly defined norms and standards, which is circulated across the whole country and is used by all officials involved in exams. And with each of these norms and standards, we have input indicators, process indicators, and output indicators. So irrespective of where in the country exams are being implemented, officials, managers can evaluate their actions against these input, process, and output indicators. This just provides you a more detailed outline of what these different inputs, process, and outputs are. Then moving to some statistics which I think are possibly interesting. The total number of candidates that will be writing the 2012 National Senior Certificate Exam, 623,897. That includes both full-time candidates as well as part-time candidates. And part-time candidates are our repeat candidates, those that have written the Grade 12 in previous years. We have set in total 264 question papers. And that includes question papers for the November as well as question papers for the March supplementary. In total, across the 9 provinces, we will be printing 7.8 million question papers. We anticipate to finally mark 7.4 million answer scripts across the entire country. The examinations will be implemented across 6,570 both independent as well as public centers. For this entire process, across the 6,000 examination centers, we will use an estimated 65,000 invigilators. And finally, to conduct the marking at the 123 marking centers, we will utilize 35,000 markers during the period of December. And now, Honorable Chair, just to look at our statistics in terms of enrollment figures, and what I've done is to provide you a comparison from 2008 when the first NSC curriculum was implemented and look at the numbers over the last 4 years or the 5 year period. Now, there has been a decline from 600 to 580 to 589 and a significant drop in 2011. But I think we've turned the corner, and we're now on 527,000. This is just the full-time enrollment. Now, the 511,000, I think we explained at our previous meeting, was as a result of the change in the admission policy in the year 2000. And if one looks at the numbers across provinces, KwaZulu-Natal with 132,000, Gauteng 91,000, and Limpopo 78. What is interesting, Honorable Chair, is that if one looks at our three rural provinces, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, and Eastern Cape, they contribute more than 50% of the grade 12 candidature. That's just the graph to indicate the trend over the last 5 years. And then looking at part-time enrollment, and I think the committee is concerned about part-time enrollment, and yet again, there's been an increase from 2011 by 8,000, from 112,000 to 120,000, but I think we still expect higher numbers of learners enrolling as part-time, because these are learners that have not been successful over the years. And one is always concerned about where they are if they have not enrolled to write the NSC examination. And that's the trend over the last 5 years in terms of part-time enrollment. I think a significant increase from 39,000 in 2009 to 120,000 in 2012. This particular table provides the consolidated picture comparing 2011 and 2012 of both full-time and part-time. And in the case of full-time candidates, we have an increase of 16,000. And in the case of part-time candidates, an increase of 8,000. So in total, 647,000 candidates, both full-time and part-time, will be writing the 2012 NSC examination. Also interesting, there was a slight drop in three provinces, but in the other six provinces, there's been a marginal increase in numbers. I'm also certain that the honorable members would be interested in the subject figures, particularly with regard to maths literacy, mathematics, and physical science. If one looks at the mathematics, a slight increase of 1,000 candidates from 229 to 30,000, a significant increase in maths literacy. So it would appear that the 16,000 increase that we have, 15,000 of them have taken maths literacy, and maths literacy has increased from 281 to 297. Incidentally, the proportion of maths literacy to maths currently stands at 56-44, which certainly is a picture that we want to move in the other direction and possibly get closer to possibly 50-50 in favor of mathematics. In the case of physical science, a slight decrease from 184 to 182,000. But I think the important aspect is that all learners currently take some form of mathematics as part of the NSC. This gives you the trend in terms of mathematics over the years, and that's the picture in terms of mathematical literacy over the last 5 years, and in the case of physical science, over the last 5 years. And now moving to the exam administration, and maybe just to outline the monitoring approach. I think we are focusing on building a national examination and assessment system. And a national examination and assessment system simply means that whether a learner is in Zani, or whether he is in Umlazi, or whether he is in Bloemfontein, the conditions that he or she is exposed to in terms of exam must be the same. And I think that's the model that we are pursuing in terms of examination and assessment. And in order to assist provinces in this regard, we had a support visit in April, May, which we had not done previously. And the approach we followed was to ask provinces to evaluate themselves in terms of how they are doing in terms of exam using a self-evaluation instrument. And that was then followed by a site visit to the provincial office, the district office, circuit, and schools.
And I think there's an ongoing engagement with provincial departments through meetings, teleconferences, regular reporting. And finally, we conclude the year's activities in terms of readiness with a state of readiness visit, which we just completed last week in the Western Cape, and that then allows us to provide a full picture on where provinces are. Now, very quickly again, Madam Chair, is to indicate that in terms of the whole examination process, we've broken them down into 14 what we call target success indicators. And these are the success indicators, which I'm not going to go through point by point, but each one of them looks at each of the key components of this massive system around examinations and assessment. And what I want to do now is to look at the key components and establish where we are, so that I could provide the honourable members with some sense of confidence that we are on track in terms of the 2012 NSC examination. Firstly, fundamental to any examination is the registration process and making sure that the data is 100% accurate. I can indicate that all candidates have been registered on the examination computer system. We sent out two schedules to schools to check out the data, and those amendments were incorporated onto the system. We've dealt with subject changes, which always presents a problem when learners change subject during the grade 12 year. Immigrant candidates, we're very particular about making sure that all conditions and criteria are met in that regard. And then special concessions, which apply to learners with special needs, have all been appropriately managed. What we have also completed is DBE then does an audit of the registration database. And once we are satisfied that the registration database of each of the provinces is 100% accurate, we then give them the go-ahead to print marksheets. And marksheet printing across all provinces commenced on Friday the 31st. By the 15th of September, admission letters would be printed and sent to schools, which then gives every learner a clear indication of the subjects that he's registered for, the time that he's writing the examination. I can also indicate, Honorable Chair, that all enhancements on the examination system have been completed, and we're planning a complete dry run where we take the data from 2011, run it on the current computer system, and that will be completed by 30th of September, and that will be done in conjunction with Umalusi so that they can verify that the system is doing what it's supposed to do. All independent centers have been evaluated, and we are very particular about our independent centers, because we find that most of our examination irregularities emanate from these independent centers. So we do an audit on an annual basis of all independent centers, and where there's an element of doubt, a lingering doubt about the credibility of that center, then the provincial department takes over the management of exams at that independent center, where we appoint invigilators who normally are district officials to manage the exam. In 2012, honorable members, we had to take over candidates from the ex-ERCO, Examen Raad voor Christelijke Onderwijs. I hope I got it right. Yeah. That's one of the independent bodies that was deregistered by Umalusi, and the Director General and Minister graciously decided that we will then administer the examination to these candidates in the 2012 year. It's causing a lot of challenge simply because most of these learners are homeschoolers, so they do not have a fixed base, so that poses all kinds of challenges, but I think we are managing it quite effectively together with our provincial colleagues. In terms of question papers, honorable members, all question papers are set by the national department. So the figure that I've given you, 264 papers, are set by the department, which then provides the national standard, and these question papers are moderated by Umalusi. Just to give you a sense of some of the improvement initiatives with regard to the question paper, because you would agree with me, honorable members, that the question paper is the most important aspect of an examination. It's what gets scrutinized by all members of the public, and it's what gives the country an indication of what the standard of our examinations are. We've reviewed all our panels to make sure that we have the best in the country sitting on these panels. We've trained our examiners and moderators, and we did this in conjunction with Uma Lucy. We did a post-test analysis of performance last year, and that was fed back and made available to our examiners so that they could utilize that data when setting the 2012 examination. We conducted an international benchmark of our question papers last year with three bodies of international repute, and the findings of that report were also made available to our examiners. Something that we are now beginning to do, which started last year, is to get selected individuals to pre-write our test papers so that they give us a sense of how do they experience the exam and how a learner would experience, and those comments are also incorporated into the paper before it's finalized. For the first time this year, honorable members, we are going to have a common assessment framework across all 11 languages. Previously, each language was assessed based on different standards, but all 11 languages, English, Afrikaans, isiXhosa, isiZulu, will follow a common structure, which I think is a major achievement in terms of examination. Closer monitoring of our moderation process, and lastly, that which we have done this year is improved editing and translation. We now have three tiers of editing. Firstly, we have our own internal editors, then it gets edited by, it's our examiners who edit. They are responsible for editing. Then our internal editors. And finally, we get a provincial group of editors to do the final editing and quality assurance. So in terms of question papers, all question papers are set for both March and November. Papers have been adapted for the blind, partially sighted, and the deaf candidates. And the Braille is currently in progress. That should be completed by the end of September. Then, the important process of packing and printing and distribution. Making sure that at 9 o'clock on the 22nd of October, every learner gets the correct question paper on his or her desk. I think that's what is dealt with in this particular component. And I can report, Honorable Chair, that six of our PDs have excellent in-house printing and packing facility. The other two, which is Free State and Limpopo. Limpopo uses government printing works and Free State uses CETA. And the Eastern Cape outsources to a reputable service provider. But we're hoping that the other three provinces will also come on board in the next year or two and develop their own in-house printing facility so that we can ensure the kind of security that is required. So printing and packing is progressing according to plan, and I can mention, honorable members, that in six of our provinces, printing will only start middle September, simply because we don't want to print the papers early enough because that becomes a security risk. And these provinces have excellent printing facilities that if they start middle September, they will be able to print and pack and be ready for the first examination on the 22nd of September. Something that we've done this year, we've introduced pre-sealed, which simply means that question papers get sealed into packs of 10, 20, and 5. Now, this not only reduces the human contact with that particular batch, but it helps with the packing, because the pre-packing and pre-sealing is done by a machine. So it's a machine that packs into 10s and 5s. So it guarantees some kind of accuracy when you're packing. And then the packers that we use will not have physical contact with the question paper, which is also reducing the risk. Storage facilities across all provinces, distribution points have been inspected, and there are still some distribution points that we think we can improve on the security, but in the main, we have no cause for concern at the moment. Question papers will be distributed to schools on the morning that the examination is written across all 8 provinces, except the Western Cape, but the Western Cape have made a commitment that they will pilot daily distribution in 2030. In the case of Northern Cape, they also do daily distribution across most of the centers, except for schools that are far away from from the district where they are allowed to store at particular schools. The writing of the exam. Exam will commence on the 22nd, conclude on the 28th. Invigilators have been trained, or some of them are still in the process of being trained, because we make sure that every invigilator in the country is exposed to the rules and regulations of this particular exam. The principal, in all cases, is the chief invigilator, so that he takes final accountability for the exam, except if he has a son or daughter writing the exam. We have detailed regulations which govern all aspects of exam, and we've even provided a simplified guideline to assist provinces in this regard. All chief invigilators are officially appointed, and monitoring, which is really critical, is done by PDs at the different levels, GBE as well as Umalusi. And what we've come to identify over the years, honorable members, are schools that have a history of irregularity, and we monitor them more closely so that they have no chance of repeating those irregularities. Collection of answer scripts, just to say that we are inculcating in the system the fact that your answer script is just as important as the question paper. We found that in previous years that once provinces have distributed the question paper, they feel well. That's where the security ends. But the answer script is possibly more important, because that contains the learner's evidence of his performance over the last 12 years. And therefore we're saying that the return journey of the script must enjoy the same priority as the question paper. So all question papers must be returned to the district office on the same day that the exam is written. Scripts are correctly labeled so that we make sure that there are no missing scripts. And that's our target every year. We judge provinces by the number of scripts that go missing. And I must say that that is virtually a no-no in the system where scripts go missing. We've also introduced norm times, because we don't want scripts to remain at the school for too long. So we give schools a time period, for example, 30 minutes, that it must leave the school from the time the exam concludes, an hour by which it must get to the district. And obviously they record these times and we monitor that quite frequently. Marking, Honorable Chair, which is a critical process, I can report that marking centers have been established across all PEDs. Markers have been appointed in most provinces. But something that we're doing this year, which we piloted on a very small scale last year, is the competency test. This year the competency test will be piloted across all provinces, and we are saying that in 2012 it would not be used for selection but for placement. And we feel that by 2013, once we've established proper systems, we can then use the competency test for selection purposes. Training of markers is ongoing. And we are encouraging provinces to have a dedicated training session for markers. We will host the national marking guideline discussions in Pretoria for all subjects, so that we have a standardized marking guideline. And also what is important is that our chief markers understand how to implement the marking guideline. Internal moderators will be appointed for each subject across all marking centers. DBE will appoint its own external moderators, which becomes the next level of quality assurance, and Umalusi also does the same. So we have various tiers of quality assurance in the system. In terms of school-based assessment, I must admit that this is one of our challenges, but I think given what has been presented in the previous report, that we've deployed 79 moderators. We did that in July, and we're going to do that again in October. I think that's sending out a very strong message about the rigor and the quality that is expected. Provincial moderation across all provinces will be completed by 31st of October, and SBA marks will be captured by the 18th of November. And then, Honorable Chair, something that we haven't done previously in terms of life orientation. I know that the Portfolio Committee has also raised concern about the standard and the quality of assessment in life orientation. And for the first time this year, we've introduced a common assessment task, which will be written in life orientation on the 7th of September, that's this Friday, across all schools. And we believe that this is a first step towards standardizing assessment across all schools in the case of life orientation. Now, to prepare the system for this common assessment task, we provided an assessment guideline together with the assessment exemplar so that learners are not taken by surprise when they write this common task on Friday the 7th. Moving very quickly to processing and release, just to give you an indication, honorable members, of some of the important dates leading towards the release on the 3rd of January. Marking will be completed across all provinces by the 14th, capture by the 16th of December. And then we have a technical team that will look at the data and prepare proposals for Umalusi on the 18th. We have the pre-standardization on the 19th and 20th. And the important Umalusi standardization meeting will take place on the 21st of December. And from the 23rd to the 27th, we dedicate that period to checking and checking and checking to make sure that every learner receives the correct result. And finally, we will then await the official approval of the results by Umalusi on the 27th, and the minister will then make the official announcement on the 3rd of January. But then the important part, that which links exams and assessment with teaching and learning, is the analysis and feedback. And we will then do a detailed analysis of results per school, per district, per province, per subject. This will be made available to all schools. We also put together a qualitative analytical report which looks at per subject, what are the areas of weakness, what caused poor performance, and what are some of the remedial measures that need to be implemented. And that's distributed to all schools. We also distribute to our examiners and selected curriculum specialists the outcome of the Umalusi standardization meeting, because that meeting produces some very important findings. We will then, in 2013, conduct workshops with teachers and subject advisors, and then focus on our underperforming schools and underperforming subjects, where we will put together improvement plans. And finally, examinations can only be regarded as being complete once the learner receives the certificate. And I think this year, by the end of July, every learner in the country had received their certificate. And for 2013, we are committing to ensuring that by the end of May, every learner in the country could have his or her certificate. So that's the examination cycle, Honorable Chair. And what I've done here is just to present you with the 14 indicators and to indicate that we monitor each of these indicators very closely. If you look at the state of play at the moment, there are three of those indicators that we can say we've accomplished. There are two of them which we could say that we are in progress with, and the rest, obviously, will be the ones that will be implemented as we move into marking and the writing and the like. And hopefully, we'll be able to report to you in January that all 14 indicators were achieved at the highest level of performance. And finally, Honorable Chair, is that when one talks about exam readiness, one cannot ignore learner readiness. And I think what was presented in the quarterly report is a whole list of what we as a department are doing in terms of making sure that our learners are ready to write not just the NSC exam, but the ANA and the continuing process of examinations and assessment that we have in the system. But just to highlight some of the key interventions relating to grade 12, teacher development program and targeting specifically underperforming schools. We flooded the market or the schools with the support material in terms of newspaper supplements, self-study guides, worksheets, exemplar paper, radio broadcast lessons, and specifically subject support strategies, subject workshops focusing on content gaps that were picked up in our diagnostic report. We have resource material on Tutong and the DBE website, our maths and science intervention. And I think in 2012, that which we have really paid much attention to is curriculum coverage. And Mr. Mweli and his team have been sending out officials to monitor this across all schools. And teacher accountability and class attendance have also been prioritized. And I think that which has been a real significant lever was that diagnostic report which I spoke about. And it's been used by most of our teachers to make sure that we do not have a repetition. But obviously, this takes a few years to get to where we want to. And past papers together with exam guidelines. So in conclusion, honorable members, I think from where we are at the moment and based on the reports that we've received and the inspections and audits we've done, we can say that all PDs are ready to administer. But I always say that in the examination process, there is one element that you cannot control for, and that is the human element. So we can put in all the mechanisms, the process and the system, but the human element may default. But I think we've got adequate control measures to bring that factor under control. And I think the DBE will focus particularly in 2012 on Limpopo, Eastern Cape and Northern Cape in view of what the Honorable Chair has mentioned earlier. And in conclusion, to say that the DBE continues with its agenda of building a credible national examination and assessment system. Thank you, Chair.
Doctor, I'd like to thank you for your report. And I think both reports were very good. And I'm sure we enjoyed listening to them. I think, Doctor, on slide 7, this year the spoken size, I think she said 12, just change it to 12. And then when it comes to members, you have to keep you ready, go to slide 56. Yeah, 56. For the Malusi standardization meeting for the 21st of December. Because I asked them to invite everyone, not only the chairperson for that. And there you'll have all the stakeholders present. And then the results will be released on the 3rd of January. Members will have to keep themselves ready for that too. Thank you. Again, all the reports to questioning. And I don't know, I'll give each one 3 questions for the time being. And try and keep the questions when it comes to what we did, Anna, to a minimum. And we did infrastructure. So try to keep those to a minimum and ask new questions now, please. Thank you. Not old questions, right? No, I've got my book here. I'll start with Honorable Dina. Let us just go right down. Is that okay? In order?
Yes. Check with chair whether it's an old question.
Now let us go to, then we skip you for the time being. We'll go to Honorable Makubela.
Is it a new or old?
No, the lady loves chair. There's no way in which I can start today.
And only 3 in it, because everyone would like to ask some questions. It's not 4.
Okay, so you change very quickly.
No, I withdraw it last week, that day, so he's cut that.
Alright, okay.
So, let me get to the 3 that you want us to ask. The first, I think it would relate to slide 44.
Which one?
The one that talks of the Kundalushaka Bazaars. It talks of 11,500. The nature of the question, or the way I want to ask it, has to relate to several of other aspects. When the DG opened this input or presentation, he said the input or presentation will be related to DBE budget, not necessarily overall sectoral performance, because most of those you won't know how they perform. But now in this particular slide, and perhaps others similar to this, you go into the extent of saying how many receipts, 10 province and so on and so on. To me, it goes like you're beginning to tell what is going to happen. Unless, all I'm trying to get to say is that this money is with provinces. And provinces, in their administration of those funds, you have even some of them, these students, not even been paid for in the university. And there are issues in that parliament. Say that we may be able to talk to saying this is what has happened according to what we know, but we are not able to enforce what needs to happen in terms of those particular funds and that actual performance. To me, to simply talk of those numbers without seeing what has actually happened, it may not give us a clear picture as to what is going on. The second chair will be to know that of the 623,000 matriculants who will be sitting for the exam this year, it's out of how many. For instance, 12 years ago, when this particular group of learners registered or enrolled, how many were there? And what is our challenge in that particular regard? The last chair, because I must now try to get three out of the number I had. Let me clarify this one. Now that we're saying we're ready for the event, in the event there's a challenge, what is the turnaround? If there's any particular problem, how long does it take to fix that? What is our standard? Keeping what I'm saying, to say, I know this last year or year before last, you will find that there are challenges of electricity, there's no backup, kids don't write, it's not known what then should happen, when will they write, and so on. What is our turnaround? By when do we think, for how long does it take us to handle? It may not be you alone, provinces are actually involved, but what is the standard national? So that this readiness to the system is ready to respond, not being ready to run the event, but ready as well to respond in the event there are particular challenges. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I hope I'm not asking an old question, but Dichi and the team, thank you for the presentation. Dichi, it is a truism that parental involvement in the education of the children is very important through the SGP. And according to the first quarter report, the SGPs have been elected and some training has been done. But my question is, since the establishment of SGPs to help in the run of the school, they've been trained, but they've always remained scarecrows or non-gain the school. Something that is just there to scare away some birds from. They're not effective. You know, I know that provinces, and including yourself, DG, have to act within the precinct, the prescripts of SASA. You can't have put qualifications for those who must be elected to SGPs, but really they are not effective. Are you not considering any other means of getting the right people into these bodies, because they're not being effective? And some of these, of course, are not trainable. They're not trainable. I mean, you cannot drive a 16 valve car like as if you are driving an 18, you know, you can't, the engine will just burst. Yet they are vital. That's why there is this difference in quality education in Model C, in previous Model C schools, because SGPs there are effective, but not in our schools, not out of their own making. What can be done? That's one question. No, no, no. A scarecrow is something that is, you know, when you're a farmer, I'm a farmer.
I know what it is.
Do you know?
Okay.
It's being used analogously. That's a picture. Okay. My second question is on what is it now? This whole school evaluation on page 40. In some provinces, no information is forthcoming, and certain schools only, say in KwaZulu-Natal, for instance, about how many schools, very few schools have been visited. What is the position? What will be the sanctions in cases where there's no information forthcoming from those services? The last one, on page 38, the TPA. Why have you subjected this process into a joint? That is education and SATU, whereas there are other unions outside there, but it's a joint now. I would have preferred, even if there's a delay, if it's in a proper negotiating a forum like NETLAC, but it's just a joint, you know. I rest my case. Third question.
Thank you, Jefferson.
You knew I would ask a question.
I knew.
That's your old question, that
But he still is there.
My first question would be on page 44. Yeah, though it's not on it as such, but it's about what is there on page 44, where they were mentioning the institutions that offer initial teacher education. My question to Captain there would be, what is the relationship between the DBE and such institutions? The reason why I'm asking this to Captain is that you always get complaints that to say the product that we get out of the new teacher, let me say, do not come out of this institution ready to come and teach. There is so much that needs to be done to them. In such a way, I'll always translate back to my constituency, coming from KwaZulu-Natal, the university that is closer to myself is University. Whenever you go around the school, they will be complaining that the products we're getting from the university are the teachers that you don't even want them to be taken to our school, because clearly they are not taught what is expected of them to do when they go out to the school. So my question is, yes, we see the numbers, they are there, the number of students that are being produced, but as the TBE, is there any relationship that we have with this institution in that whatever product you get today will address the needs that you have at school? Because as for now, really, that's a huge complaint that you get out there, of which is not really helping the system that you are in. Secondly, Chairperson, it's around Karikut. I heard that I don't know whether for this year the first intake is or is that
Karikut.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I heard that the intake. I think for the first for the first intake for this year, it started now in June. I wonder why. Maybe there are challenges around. But what I'm more interested in is
what is the interest of Kelvin if we can say we look at the whole program? Are we saying that really it does address the level of illiteracy in our country? Are we seeing it helping? And I want to even to look on the issues of articulation. Once a person does this therapy, are we seeing him, is it possible for such a person to go through the other NPL levels, register with AZ and all? I just want us to look at the impact of really what is it that you're contributing to the country. Yes, we can be here to say such numbers, there are huge numbers of people who enroll in this project or program, but what is the impact thereof? So that we see what they need. The last one for now, check with them, as you said, it's must be three.
Yeah, because I think we're going to have enough time to ask them
to come for another round. It's like 65. The percentage is the percentage is a little bit interesting to me, because when we look at children, 29 the previous year and 12, and we talk of the indicators to measure the reputation, the grade reputation, I don't understand it as it stands. Maybe it can be unpacked for me, but my question is this: when you look at those 63, 50, that is why I say I don't understand it really. I don't know whether it means there are more repeaters on the grade, but whatever thing should be 65, it's like 65. Whatever it would be, I think it will go back to the question that I always have, Chairperson.
Mm-hmm.
I know you'll say it's not me, but I want to pose it again. The rule or the regulation that is there on repeating of grades. How do we connect those percentages to that? And I want to raise it again, Chairperson, that I wish that it is there with all the officials. As to say, I wish we can go back and look at the regulation of the thing at raising the grade, Chairperson, as to say what impact that it has in our education system. Is it helping us or is it not? I'm not saying learners should repeat, but what impact is it having? Are we not seeing a higher rate of dropout as you go up the ladder towards matric just because we've been pushing learners that were not ready? Or we push them with an understanding that the next teacher will assist on what they did not gather the previous grade, and we have teachers that are not ready to do so. And what is the impact and what is the intention to that learner whom we keep on pushing up? Are we not seeing them dropping out come grade 9 between on the FEC band? That is where we find the high dropout rate. It is not because of practicing that you are doing the regulations that you have within the system. Thank you.
I'll go to four, then I'm taking on the show on it, and then I'll speak again.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it's like 20 provincial visits to monitor curriculum coverage. 20 provincial visits to monitor curriculum coverage. And I want to link that with learner readiness that Dr. Puglia was talking about. What feedback can the department give us? You've gone to provinces, you have monitored if they have covered the curriculum, you know, curriculum coverage. What is the feedback? And like I said, that it also impacts on learner readiness. How ready are our learners to do that? The second question, competency tests for markers. I must say that when this thing was mooted, I think it was in the Western Cape when it started, I think it's very ironic. I'm not saying it's not a good thing, but effectively we are saying to a teacher, you have been teaching this subject from January, but you are not competent to mark it. This is a teacher, if this this year mark or continuous assessment, whatever, this is the very teacher who has been who has been teaching and marking. So the year mark that we have, or the continuous assessment mark that we have, comes from this very teacher. I don't understand, but even worse, listen to this, chapter 10. We are told, no, this competency test is not for whether you are going to be accepted or not. It's for placement. Does it mean the department is going to say, you can't go to that marking center because you are incompetent? You'll go to the other one. How does this thing work? We are assessing you, but only for placement. Does it mean there will be centers for incompetent markers? I don't understand. I have two questions, Chairperson.
Very good.
No, I think I can come back on in the next round. Thanks.
And I think that's the whole question might be very interesting. Because every member sitting here asked that question already. And it's a very interesting one, and I have to give us answers.
Thank you, Chairperson. Message person, on your strictness, on our strictness. If you have sons and daughters, then people must be careful that you don't see this person. But if you are referring to Africans, you should be talking of siblings as well. Because if you check those who have sons and daughters, that they must not hand you. Okay. I was like saying, maybe there is not much fairness there when you just talk of, when you think of sons and daughters of this particular person who is dealing with it. The question to us. And then, secondly, your issue of safety and security in schools, I don't want to talk about that. Those other things that they talked about. I don't understand why, when we have to speak of safety and security, we don't deal with it the whole year. Such that we deal with it the whole year, and in the whole country, having some uniform approach, where schools must have, as a matter of urgency, maybe an adopted corps and a team of safety in every school, a safety and security team, where this corps will be visiting schools maybe every week or every month, whatever the case. So it's like that we don't talk of safety and security in terms of question papers when it comes to December. So that we have our schools safe. I'm checking if we can move towards that direction, because it might just it, so that we don't come here and talk of safety and security when it comes to this. And then finally, Cape Town and their margin is currently great. The phase 2 of Christ in Cape Town. Western Cape. Your Western Cape. Yeah, they can be trusted. My understanding is that they can be trusted. With maybe because there is somewhere to put the streets or whatever, they can even get them maybe a day before whatever. And these other provinces must wake up in the morning, go collect streets, and at the end of the day, the results from those who got these streets yesterday always seem better. Are we doing the right thing? Such that perhaps it's time we treat every province, every school, every high school equal. This thing of having a safety whatever is taking us there. Because I think these learners are not necessarily treated the same if the provinces are not treated the same. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Two of my questions have been covered. I am also very concerned about the so-called duet with SATU, and then also the competency tests and the placement of the incompetent markers. So let me focus on three others. Dr. Collier gave a very comprehensive presentation, so there's not terribly much. Well, it was very, very comprehensive. I think the only thing really is the competency of Marcus. So I'm going to focus on the other ones. 527 refers to, and onwards, refers to Anna, Chair. And it refers only to grades 3, 6, and 9. Now, my understanding is that grades 1 to 6 are in fact doing Anna this year. Grades 1 to 6?
1 to 6 and
9. Okay. My understanding is also, yeah, but the slides only refer to 3, 6, and 9. So I just wanted to confirm that it is indeed grades 1 to 6 and then grade 9. I will do. I will do. Sorry, Chair. And just to raise two concerns that have been raised by teacher principals in schools that I've been to visit over the last couple of weeks. The one is that grades 1 and 2 apparently will have the questions read to them. If you could just explain the process, I mean, will the learners then answer verbally, or will they write, or how will that work? Mm-hmm. Some principals were concerned that grade 3 was still too young to read a written, but I know you've done it before, and you'll have experience there. And then in terms of the assessment, the assurance, the quality assurance, one of the examples, and it's a very small example, but it says a lot. One of the examples that came up in a small rural school outside Kirkwood in the Eastern Cape, small farm school, was the word lichava in a reader for grade 2. Now, these are farm children. Their parents are seasonal orange pickers. They have never seen a lichava in all their lives. They are 7 years old. This is supposed to be done in one lesson. This word, lichava, is one word in a lesson that's got to be done in one lesson. The teacher tells me that it has taken her 4 lessons to explain any vliegtuie, any loots, any vliegtuie, and hoekom gebruiken mense vliegtuig, and all this sort of stuff to eventually get to the word lichava. So that these little rural children of orange citrus pickers can understand the word lichava. And it really made me question the quality assurance, but now particularly with Emma, we're going to be assessing literacy, and we might be using words like lichava and expecting that those children actually understand them, and when we don't, we judge them badly. And probably 90%, I don't know the percentages, you would know better than I do, but a very high percentage of children are in fact in our rural areas. A lot of South Africa is rural. And whether that is indeed taken into account. So that's on the, and I'll be quick with the others, Chair.
How many?
No, that was a question on the other.
And
it's very, very difficult, Chair. There are so many. Let me just ask straight out then, because a lot of them are concerned. Let me just ask straight out. Textbook ordering, our understanding from previous presentations is that textbook ordering should have taken place by the end of August, and I see Barbara Creasy in Gauteng has put out a statement saying that textbook ordering in Gauteng has taken place. Have textbooks been ordered in Limpopo? Today is the 4th of September. Have textbooks been ordered in Limpopo? And with that, of course, has money been found to pay for them for 2013?
Mm.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. The next one will be Honourable Moni. Have you got a question at the moment? Or might I go to Honourable Mishishi? Honourable Mishishi?
Thank you, Chairperson. And thanks for the informative presentation. My question is on the school infrastructure.
where you talk about the backlog grant. I just want to know about the relationship with other sisters' department of human settlement and water concerning sanitation project. How is the relationship on that one? And then the other question about the state of the readiness. Honorable I know the government covered me on the readiness of our learners. Yes, covered me. And I just want to check. I think doctor didn't cover the two provinces, that is Northern Cape and Limpopo, especially the greater, with the crisis that has happened just now. I don't know whether it's due to this report about the great health in the Northern Cape and then in the Limpopo. Lastly, on the learner improvement, you talked of the subject support strategy, where you said that a subject workshop will focus on context gaps. How did you undertook that? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, let me also concur with regard to the good report that we received. And may I also use this opportunity just to say that the report that we received in the previous meeting on the Ifunza Lusaka was accurate in the sense when I arrived in Stafford, as I said, I would go there. I found that the Eastern Cape has already rolled out the process of making sure that districts identify learners that receive the bursaries and then come back to the districts. So that's very good. Chairperson, then with regard to the questions, I have three questions on each of the reports. One is the on the examination. Was there an effort to decrease the number of marking centers? Because we've seen and we have, I think there is evidence that a marking center compromised quality and standards. Then, Chairperson, with regard to the money, there are some underspending, which is a concern, this one on curriculum. I think there's something big wrong in Karikudi, but maybe we will put some written questions to that regard. The question that I have is the 234 million rand for departmental operations together with the 69 million rand for projects. Does that include legal costs, which I haven't seen an amount reported on that one. Chairperson, then the question on the intervention, which is the main challenge. May I ask whether the interventions with regard to appointments of district directors is assisting the appointment of them, or is it sort of disadvantaging that process. Because in the Eastern Cape, out of 24 districts, there are 11 acting directors. 11. So is it the legislation that's you know, prohibiting you to appoint or to allow them to appoint? What's happening? And then also on the intervention, there is this legislation for the exams, especially Northern Cape, Limpopo, and the other one. The problem or the question there is, are you taking measures to make sure, as Honorable Mashisi has said, special measures with regard to those three problems? Maybe we should hear part of it.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I have one question. The other one is, I don't know if I will call it a correction or, I don't know. On page 36, processing and release 2011, I paired with this because I see marking will be completed by the 14th December. I don't know whether it is 14th December 2011. So I don't know, I'm just bringing this to your attention that this could be an error, and if it is an error, it needs to be corrected, because we are dealing with 2012 this time around, in 2011. I was listening, I didn't hear you. I was listening. The only thing is you are too far from me and I couldn't hear you. But I think if that was corrected, then it's okay. I'm worried about slide number 35, where you speak of school-based assessment. Now, the grade 12s who are doing technical subjects, this I always, really, I'm not going to move back on this one. I'm not going to back down on this one. Schools that offer technical subjects have a practical component. Now, I don't know how assessment is done here in schools that are affected by infrastructure problems. As we know, we did one time indicate in this meeting that as a committee, we did touch one school in Limpopo, where they offer practical subjects like bricklaying, carpentry, and so on and so on. But there are no workshops. Now, the question is, when you assess these kids, I'm particularly interested in the end of the year, what type of marks do you get from the schools that you really genuinely will say this learner has produced this from the practical component? I'm worried about the practical component. The theory is okay, but the practical component. And this country is crying about the training of artisans. We even go to Cuba to look for artisans when we have our own artisans here, but they are only trained in theory and not in practical work. Because I know in other places, of course, if there are workshops, that's not a problem. But I'm worried about, you know, we speak of mass schools. To me, a mass school is a school there, you know, you can do some teaching. I don't say we must leave them out. But really, there's a school that must have theory and practical. You'll have to have a workshop there before anything else, because otherwise they're doing half work. They're doing half work. Now, in my days, poor performing learners were the ones who would go, for example, to a technical or a vocational school because he can't perform in the theory. Then they take him to a vocational school. It's also something wrong there. You can't take a person who is poor in everything and say you must go and build you a building, you must go and manufacture you a chair, you will fall. So I'm pleading. I don't want an answer right now. I'm pleading. The Department of Education, please check these places that offer practical subjects. Make sure that, you know, what you give us is genuine, because we begin to suspect that these marks are concocted marks. They were concocted somewhere. Then you say he produced a chair, when in actual fact he never produced a chair. Maybe he was requested to use cardboard to produce that, something that looks like a chair. That's not practical. I'm just complaining. It's not a question. And if you don't answer it, I will not worry. But I will want to see one day when I go to that school that we visited, because I went there, they say, you know, that was your visit, and it ended on that day. Nothing is happening. The province is not reporting anything. They have not even come to check whether there is a place for the workshop where they can build a workshop. Nothing. So it's just a meeting. It ended as a meeting. Thank you.
And of course,
sorry, the last one, because I still have, of course, a chance to post another one. The last one is just to add to what Mr. Igwe has said here. Maybe we should think of teacher placement tests and not competence. I'm just thinking, I was thinking very hard here. Maybe it must be teacher placement test. Should we place him, we must imagine this center or in that center, and then we'll use your criteria as to who must mark there and who must mark there. But if it is competency, it has nothing, really, that it doesn't serve any purpose. Just to add to what he said there.
Thanks a lot for those questions. Mine is on slide 24. Central procurement. I read in the papers last week there was a court case in the Eastern Cape when it comes to central procurement. And I think the department didn't win that case. So, procurement will be done now by the different schools, and principal says they are worried. Is it correct or is it wrong? But there was something in the papers when it comes to central procurement, Eastern Cape, and the model that's being used. I think it was Grahamstown that took the department to court on it, which was front page news. Then when it comes to the integrated quality management system and even the TPA, I'd like to know, last week in Parliament, the Deputy Minister said that there will be performance agreements for principals and teachers. Now, how is this going to be? Or is there a difference? Because I think I was to follow up the last question. And, you know, and mine looked at this that you're having here. Then my other problem is that when it comes to new recruits and the post-provisioning norm, temporary teachers, adult teachers, that you get in Glen Popo, etc. I'm worried that, it will always be my worry, that we have learners that's going to study further in the education field. But my worry is, won't they be pushing out those temporary teachers? That's why I think that, that's why I'm speaking now to the post-provision norm, because there's problems in each province. And then two, when it comes to supply and demand. So just link it to supply and demand. Because I feel sometimes, there will be a time when you'll have to stop this process, you know, in the future. But just speak to it, because we listen to the HR report, and we were a bit worried when it comes to the PPM. Thank you. You may answer.
Thank
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, for this question. We will again, as usual, I'll respond to as many of the questions I can, and then I'll refer specific questions to colleagues as I come across them. I'm going to deal with them in order, first with Honourable Masabela's question regarding Funza Lushaka and how it related to my initial comment. Indeed, this is an example of a grant which we managed directly. Did not manage the project. We transferred it to NSFAS, who manages it, and where there are problems in relation to NSFAS and the higher education institution, we deal with it. However, there are instances where provinces make their own grants for them, and very often it's those grants where there are problems. So it's important to clarify the difference between Funza Lushaka grants and grants that are made by the provinces themselves for teacher education, and there are provinces that are doing that. However, where there are instances that honourable members are aware of, please inform us about the specific incident, and we then follow up directly with the institution to resolve that matter. The other question was about matric. I'm going to just pause with that matter until the honourable member comes back, because I pulled out the presentation here, which deals with some of those issues. I don't think we have a detailed presentation to honourable members, but it does cover these issues in a clearer manner with some analysis, because the matter always comes up. Every time we release the results, we anticipate it will come up again, and we thought that it's important just to share some of the analysis so that at least the responses and statements are informed by what's been going on in the system over the last few years. Is the system ready to respond to challenges? I leave that to Dr. Polia. That's an important question, and specifically it relates to things like power failures and so forth. And we know that some local authorities have typically chosen exam time to cut off electricity for non-payment of services. So Dr. Polia will speak to that matter. Honourable Member Bonshana about parental involvement, LGBT and so forth. I do agree that's an area of major weakness. However, I also feel that it's not necessarily the case that a person without significant schooling cannot be an effective LGBT member. And not only are there examples in South Africa of that, but examples in other parts of the world. And indeed, our legislatures, whether it's local governments, provincial and national, also have people who may not have a lot of schooling, but who have demonstrated leadership, which some organizations refer to as organic leadership, skills in the art of leading people in government. So people are capable, and we find that there are many very successful entities in rural areas comprised of people who don't have significant qualifications. However, the point is an important point, and we've got to ensure that the skills development does happen without excluding people. That's the reason for my earlier comment. Without excluding people, but recognizing that over and above what they have, they need extra skilling, like counselors need extra skilling who come in without that necessary formal training. The other issue is that in terms of the TPA and the duet there, we must apologize in the way it was articulated. What was intended there is that we're talking to all the unions, and each of the unions is developing their perspective on the matter. We engage together in the ELRC, but we also have their individual perspective. Well, that's an example where they're testing their views with us, and we do that with all the unions. So again, just to reassure honourable members that there isn't a special duet between the DDE and a particular union. We will. It will be corrected.
What's that?
I was saying to Honourable Bonjani, as soon as I saw this, I did some fact finding, and I'm told that the reason why such is singled out is because they were the only ones who were not ready to sign a few days ago. The others had come in to sign, so the understood in that context that the others are resigned, so that we still have issues with the document.
And generally, see, the honourable member is very informed about these things because of the time when I was, yes, two steps ahead of me. But yeah, the truth of the matter is when we confront it with the reality like that, we do have to, like all negotiations, enter into specific bilateral. But that's the only reason for that. But I think honourable members are correct. I think it's unfortunately worded, and we will correct that. Honourable Gina, initial teacher education quality. Mr. Kagano will speak to that matter, but again, this is a major area of challenge to us. We know our big challenges are content and pedagogy, and increasingly we clear that our problem is language, in particular African language. You know, I just returned with the minister from a conference, Commonwealth minister, where all countries are raising the issue of language. It asks you to understand that South Africa is not the only country experiencing this problem. And the euphoric rhetoric about the crisis in education in South Africa is somewhat muted when you look at it globally, because you know, there are many countries experiencing this problem, very similar to ours. And the problem of language, surprisingly, hits even countries that are considered to be fairly successful. Mauritius, for example, has got a huge language problem. Now, unless we address this issue, and therefore unless we define teacher quality broadly to include languages specifically, we are not going to cut this problem. But my colleagues will pick up on that one. Kari Gure and its impact, again, numerically the impact has been significant. We believe that the numbers will continue to grow. The evaluations we've got so far in Kari Gure are quite positive. The numbers in terms of the level of literacy in the population seem to be shifting in the right direction. Obviously not contributed to so many by Kari Gure. But clearly, from our point of view, we feel there's more that we need to do to deal with this problem of literacy. One of the things that we have to arrest is every time we have dropouts in SAT, every time we have dropouts from school, we add to the pool of illiteracy. What you want to do is not add to that pool, you want to reduce the backlog. So that's the challenge with literacy. Great repetition and the percentage. Again, yeah. The honourable member is absolutely right. The promotion and progression policy is a good policy by global standards, but it depends on certain things. It depends on where we make a very accurate diagnosis of the deficits that learner is going to carry through. That you've got a system in place, including teaching, that will address those deficits of that learner within the phase. That when that learner leaves the phase, they leave with all the outcomes that have been achieved. Now, if you have systemic problems, that assumption doesn't hold water. So the learner is passed, they've got deficits, which is fine in terms of the policy. They only repeat a phase one, so they pass. But the remediation that ought to take place specifically to deal with the learner's deficits, specifically, not just the class, teaching, that is not happening in schools that don't have quality. So it comes back to our overall quality challenges. Now, do we fix it by changing the progression policy? You could, but changing progression may just cause more learners to fail. To solve that problem, we need to improve quality. We need to improve those things, teaching, curriculum delivery, etc., that improve quality. So ultimately, whatever way you come at this problem, the solution is always quality that we focus on. So when we talk about CAPS and our workbooks, we're talking primarily about improving quality. However, while we do that, these problems, which manifest as a result of the quality problems, continue to plague the system, where we have high progression right up to grade 9. And then at grade 9, with SAT looming and assessment looming, we have a massive dropout. We also have a huge repetition in grade 10, by the way, which you'll see in a moment when I show you. Honourable Jacobo asked about curriculum coverage. I leave that to Mr. Mweli in terms of its impact. Competency assessment of markers. Dr. Collier will answer that one. about whether we are going to place the incompetent elsewhere. Honorable Nshwana, in terms of the safety team, one of my colleagues will take that up. Western Cape Education Department, Dr. Collier, will take that up about the capacity. Honorable Lovemore also posed a question about the threat with such. You have responded to that one. Also, the competency test, I've responded to that one. On ENA, through you, Honorable Chair, to Honorable Lovemore, yes, grades 1 to 6 participate in ENA and grade 9. However, externally administered ENA is grade 3, 6, and 9. It's grade 3, 6, and 9 that we've identified in the delivery agreement to measure the quality of the system. So it's important to distinguish between these two. Grades 1, 2, 4, 5 is externally moderated, yes. It's administered by the schools, yes. We make sure that quality is optimal. We even take some clips there to ensure that we've got some credible basis to assess. But the key areas at which we assess the system is grade 3, 6, and 9 in terms of the outcome. It is, you know, we needed to communicate this clearly because And I'm happy that Honorable Lovemore raised this question to give me the opportunity to clarify this. So from a system improvement external point of view, we are talking a lot about grade 3, 6, and 9. Indeed, many countries talk about that. At each phase, grade 3, 6, 9, and remember we got grade 12. So it's the four, not just these three. And these are the four we report on. However, we do grade 1 to 6 for purposes of getting immediate feedback on every grade for the purpose of designing intervention to improve quality. And the reason we did that is because the system was focusing a lot obsessively on grade 12. We were not focusing on where the problems were. It was clear to us that the problems in the system were in the foundation phase and in the intermediate phase. The senior phase has got huge problems too, but to say to fix up the system, let's focus on these two. And you've seen what the results came up for. The results were seriously low, because that system was almost uncharted territory. That's some of the other studies that we've done. Now we're talking about universal ANA, unprecedented in our history. Every school, every learner writes an ANA, whereas in grade 6 and 9, that is a sample of the school. So just important to clarify that. In terms of the importance we place in the results, it's about the grade 3, 6, and 9 externally administered ANA. Because there we're quite sure that the teachers themselves and other providers doesn't come into the system before. And we can place reliance. The auditors use this term, placing reliance on something. We can place reliance on that thing. And that's why it's administered. And that's why those things, those indicators are in the test. Okay. Now that's the ENA thing. As far as 1, 2, and 3, Dr. Collier will end here, but yes, indeed. Grades 1 and 2, the questions are read, and the learners write down the answers. And grade 3, they read. And indeed, in the last ENA, we picked up that as a problem. Now we're grappling with how we solve that issue. It's normal practice. It's part of teaching the foundation phase. When you teach the foundation phase, that's the approach that you use. But indeed, it's been identified as one of the factors that could have contributed to the huge differential in results between grade 2 and 3. The other factor that contributed to the differential is that grade 1 and 2 had more grade R, presumably, than grade 3 had, given our picture. We now wait and see for these results to test that issue. But we've intervened, Honorable Chair, Dr. Collier and them, and Mr. Mweli's branch, have now worked very hard with the grade 3 so that teachers can use exemplar questions so that the grade 3 can learn how to read and assess. What ENA revealed to us very starkly previously is that our grade 3s can't read the question. However, from a curriculum point of view, let me emphasize, they are expected to read the question. So something has gone wrong there. Now, you can't fix the problem by avoiding it. You've got to make sure they are taught. So we've spent a lot of time this year giving teachers exemplars to make sure the little ones are able to read the question. But I agree, it is a big issue, and that principal who raised it is spot on that it is a big issue. QA, the Lichhaber question, indeed. We've had examples like that And this is an ongoing process. We get, you know, people, teams and teams of people to QA this thing. We get teachers. But always we end up with an example. I think, you know, what time will perfect this thing? We look at Brazil, it takes time to perfect it. For example, the minister always quotes this example in Northern Cape, where they use the local dialect. But the learners didn't understand. They understood Kriol. So when you write in proper language, the learners won't understand. But when you then use the code switching, which learners are used to hear, which is Afrikaans word, they understood. So we had to learn then how do we manage the ANA. Because you've got to assess what learners know. You can't assess that which linguistically they can't access. So those are the challenges that we have, and in quality assurance we'll have to solve it. From a QA point of view, the challenge is the diversity, the linguistic diversity across the country. It's not just 11 languages. Within each of the 11 languages, you've got, you know, words, what was called in grammar a lexicon, specific to those areas, which vary. And even our people who write, exactly. So we say up front, we don't have the answers to all of these things. The quality assurance process is a way where we want to work with teachers, work with everyone to help us to do this. In terms of textbook ordering, Mr. Mwele will give us a sense there of where we are across the country, including Limpopo. Let me add, though, that we've met with the Treasury and Limpopo, and I received a letter while I was away confirming the availability of funding for 2013 procurement of textbooks. And
national,
the amount...
Sorry, to
National Treasury. National Treasury, but remember, National Treasury now exercises stewardship of the province. So the letter comes from national, but it is on behalf of the provincial budgeting process. But let me clarify, that money won't come to DBE. That money will go from the provincial treasury, not from the national treasury, will go from the provincial treasury to the provincial department of education, not the DBE. The accounting officer for that money is the administrator in the Limpopo education department. The transferring accounting officer is the administrator of the Limpopo Provincial Treasury. But the letter comes officially to us because of the intervention. So that's the clarification. By way of the ordering, we have identified the titles in the province, and somebody will add to this. We have worked very hard and are just finalizing the data, because the reason why textbook delivery in 2012 was a major problem, apart from the key milestone deadlines that were not met in terms of budget. Whether the data was just horribly wrong. I don't know why it was so wrong. Well, I suspect it's because the service provider had the data, the department had no data at all. But it was wrong. And we've been saying now, we're not going to wait to place the order whilst we fix the data. However, we can't order finally without actual data. So we're doing two things. We're alerting the publishers. We've selected the titles now. We're making sure we've got all schools. All the schools weren't even on the database before. All schools are on the database. We then have got our IT system in place. We will now, based on the data, generate orders per school. A bit like what Dr. Polia has described. You know, Dr. Polia and them do. They tell the school, here's the number of grade 12 in your school, here's the subject they registered for, this is the timetable, tell us if it's correct. Across the area. We're doing the same for textbooks now. We're generating an order for school to tell the school, here's your order. Tell us if it's right. So now, honorable members, even if IMAS is not correct, it's not an issue, because the principal now must tell us and sign off. Now, what happens is that the school is not on our list, because that happens. We now will make the district director look at the list of schools to say, right, indeed, all my schools are on, or if one of those schools are not on, we are now urgently going to get that order to that school. So that's what we'll do there, and make sure that the numbers are accurate and valid. If, again, And I have no doubt it happens. If again we are deliberately given wrong info, there will be consequences for that. Because you see, no matter what you do in essence, you have to rely at some point on somebody giving you the information. Whether it's matric or whatever, you don't physically go there and ask each learner, what's your mother tongue, what's your laws, etc. You don't do that. So, no matter how we conceive of this thing, that's what we will do. Now, again, how do we mitigate risks on World Champions? We're talking to publishers very closely. We will order from them. Because if publishers print, we order from them. And then what we do on the margin is as the numbers come in and there's adjustments, we then add to the order. The good thing is that, remember, honorable members, we're ordering new curriculum material. Those materials don't go to waste. So if any of you go to a warehouse and you see materials there, please understand those are materials that don't go to waste. In terms of data, you've got to order a bit extra so that you can make up short. That material is used next year. Because if we order accountancy for grade 11 this year, next year the same book is used. And the system we're using, central procurement in Limpopo now, is not where next year they can choose to order a completely different accounting book, which means the accounting books we order this year becomes obsolete. It will be the same accounting book that will be used the next year. So that's the system. Now, ideally, across the country, that's the system that was presented. So that's the way we are managing this process. Again, key, and Mr. Murray will add, the key thing we've done, we didn't wait for the money, by the way, the letter. Proceeded. Setting up data, meeting with publishers, titles have been selected. So we know what we buy. Fine numbers is what we're sorting out. IT system is in place. Generate the, when I say the order, it's actually what Dr. Collier discussed. The last time it caused confusion, people misunderstood in the media when we said the order. What we're basically generating is the pro forma that Dr. Collier and generated to say, in your school, here's the learners, here's the subject. We're generating the same thing to say, in your school, here's the learners, here's the subject, here's the books, the numbers. And then we send it to them. And they come back then and tell us, yes, but F2 here, etc., but the law is wrong, or the mother tongue is wrong here, etc., etc. And that's how we fix it up. We now also, on that one, using a technical process whereby it's called triangulation. And triangulation simply is where you take different sources of information, you put it together, and you assess contradictions in the best possible way. So we're using the workbook data. Because for workbook, we got information on secondary and primary school. We're using the workbook data together with CMS, together with 2012 distribution, bringing it together, including any shortages that were reported to us. We bring all that together to develop a picture of what's required to update. So Honorable Chairperson, I focused a bit on that one because I thought it's important, it's current, and Honorable Members would want to know what's going on there. Honorable Mashishi, infrastructure background guard, working with human settlements and water and sanitation, indeed, we are, and if necessary, Mr. Pariachi can add to that. Our special focus on Northern Cape and Limpopo, indeed, Dr. Collier will respond to that. Learner improvements, focus on content gaps. What are the content gaps? Mr. Mweli will focus on that. Honorable Smiles, then, it's nice to hear when a honorable member recognizes that we've responded, that indeed the Funza Lushaka is based on identifying candidates from districts, because we believe that's a good approach. They'll then hopefully go back to those districts, especially in the rural districts. Effort to decrease the number of marking centers, Dr. Collier will respond to that. Underspending on curriculum, Karigude, the CFO will respond to that. Interventions in terms of appointments, district directors, is it easier? In theory, and maybe even in law, it ought to be easy. In the case of both provinces, though, it's difficult because they one of the big problems they have in the crisis is the personnel problem. They've got too many personnel linked to their budget. Now, what that does is it impacts on your capacity to fill even vacant positions. It sounds odd, but you can have vacant managerial positions, which you can't fill because your numbers are being taken up by temporary educators. So that's the challenge. That's affecting us. The other thing is that because the numbers are so big and because we can't put in people who take over the whole HR function, it does become a bit difficult. But we want to focus on strategic positions, management, district director positions, etc. We want to make sure that district directors are people of quality who can lead. We also want to make sure that performance agreements are enforceable and credible for district directors. Because, you know, if you look at everything we describe about the system, quality, etc., for our interventions to work, it always comes down to this particular mode of intervention, which is the best. And that chain of that node of the system, that part of the system is weak. We're not going to succeed. And indeed, in the provinces that are struggling, which people would describe as dysfunctional, is where the districts are weak. That's clearly the case. So that point is taken very much. Taking special measures, I've responded to that. Honorable Khaniako, you did say he's raising a point very, very strongly. Agree with him entirely on that matter. Mr. Mwari will respond to that. And then we spoke about placement. Honorable Chair, going to you, on central procurement in the Eastern Cape, what happened there, and there was another problem that was implicated as well, what happened there is we have been advocating central procurement for reasons that we've articulated before. What the province did in this instance was to then write to school in the form of a circular, revoking part of the school's Section 21 powers. Mm-hmm. Now, Section 21 powers in terms of SASA can be allocated in full or in part. Mm-hmm. And once you allocate it, you have the power to withdraw it. However, in withdrawing the powers that a school is given in terms of Section 21, you must follow due process and you must give good reasons for doing so. The argument in this case was that due process wasn't followed and good reason wasn't given, and the time the notice wasn't good. Now, part of the allocation to schools for Section 21 is used for procurement of books. That power is withheld and the province procures books. And if it does it, it does it with economies of scale, and many provinces have done it. In this case, what we then argued and persuaded the province is that they must do it on the basis of trust. Because many schools have seen the advantage in going with central procurement. Because they get books much, much cheaper. Mm-hmm. And if the school then chooses to do that, they are then voluntarily giving up their Section 21 power in that area, mm-hmm. which is not a problem. Mm-hmm. However, if it is forced on them, it is a problem. And that's how we've tried to resolve the matter. IKMS, TPA, performance agreements with principals and teachers, Mr. Kujana will respond to that. New recruits, Honorable Chair, PPN, temporary teachers, worried about that in terms of how we absorb learners who study further. Again, we've always said that supply and demand is a very careful calculation. You know, you can't for 10 years not take in people because you have no salt shortages and then suddenly start taking in people. Sometimes if you manage a system properly, even if you don't have shortages, you create shortages by giving people early retirement to create vacancies so you have a mixed age group coming into your system. You get trained that in training 101 to do. We've had a problem in South Africa because of the disruption post-apartheid where we didn't employ teachers. That's why our age profile is so bad. And then because we don't move teachers, what's happening is we have a lot of temporary teachers, but they're in substantive posts. Now, the problem is they double parked and they're causing a budgetary problem. We need to solve that problem. And it's got its own complications, but I'm not going to go into that. One of the complications, though, where the unions have a fair point, is that all those teachers who are in excess don't necessarily have skills that match the vacancy. See, we say move the excess educators to the vacancy. But what they correctly raise with us, are those teachers matched to the vacancy? Or are you going to cause a problem? Because they say the temporary educators qualify. They've been employed based on that post. So if it's a match post, they employ a match temporary teacher. Now, do you want to take out that match temporary teacher and bring a permanent teacher but with a geography teacher into the class. You can't do that. That's not proper teaching. So again, we've got to appreciate those things in dealing with this matter. I'm responding to the issues you're raising on Wilche. So even with new graduates, they don't necessarily displace temporary students. We want a situation, though, with full proper implementation of TPM, where temporary educators are brought to a minimum, if not negligible. Substitute teachers, there will always be the case. Because human beings need to reproduce, ladies get pregnant, they have to go and leave. And we grant leave for them to go. We encourage them to have babies, because the nation depends on our generations to be reproduced. So we then have to appoint somebody to do. So that will always happen. People get sick, genuinely. That will always happen. But that's substitute teacher. And that we will always have. Honorable Charles Kopovic.
Thank you.
That's a good one.
He doesn't ask you.
I
spoke about teachers. Oh, yes, teachers.
What?
And the president spoke about mothers.
Thank you very much.
I'm trying to do that.
Sorry,
I'm
about to
get a very quickly. It's a special
Macabella. I just thought it's important.
Not on families.
No.
That's his birthday.
Honorable members, is very important, though. It looks at the thing over the years. It looks at over the years where, what was the enrollment in 94, grade 1, grade 4, grade 7, grade 7, grade 12. Look at in 94, grade 1 enrollment was 1.6 million. And just about 500,000 were enrolled in grade 12. Huge drop. Right? That's in 94. Mm. Now, look how the system has changed over the years. It's important to keep in mind. But let me make this point, which people forget. I'm going to spend, as if to emphasize points, but actually I really need to stretch my the other really thing that's important to understand is that 94 was the time we didn't have great art. And a lot of parents send their children to school for crash babysitting. We had children here in 1.6 million, as young as 3. You know, sitting in this country. So we always had over enrollment in grade 1. Always. Right? You look at 95. Now, this drop here is when the grade R starts kicking in. And then it grows demographically, and then it declines. And Carol there, who's our planner as well, will tell you that we have fertility issues in the population, so the birth rate also went down. And that explains this drop. But honorable members, look there between in 94, between grade 1 and grade 4. Honorable Chen, can you see that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I don't see. But I don't see the mark here.
Oh, sorry. If you look here, if you look between grade 1 and grade 4, now that's not the same cohort, right? Obviously, because it's in the same year. But look what happens to the enrollment, and look what happens as you go there. And as you can see there, there's a coming together there, there, that's happening there, right? So it's not good in that we still have about a million, and yet we're ending up with about that amount there. So
let me show you a bit about how it changes. Okay, that's the
design. Now, this is another one. This is what we call, let me just explain this one very quickly. We call it a quasi-cohort. So what we did was we took the grade 12 of these years and we went backwards in the data set. And we looked at what the enrollment was 11 years before. We took grade 2 enrollment. Now, why did we take grade 2 enrollment? Remember, I said that grade 1 enrollment was very unreliable. It was far too high. We had over-enrollment. So we use grade 2. Now if you look at grade 2, look at 2011. It's there. 1 million 12 years ago, and the amount which actually sets the lights for matric is there. If you look at 2010, that one there again, you can see there, it was actually higher. Now, what this suggests, this coming together like this, suggests that things are getting better over the years. Over these years, it's getting better. We projected 2012, which will look like that, and we're projecting 2014, which is this one here. Now, let me say this in the full glare of everyone. Given the demographics, given our calculation, given our analysis going backwards, we think in 2012 as well, we are going to have a phenomenon, and Rupert's figures have confirmed it, where there isn't a significant increase in grade 12 enrollment over the 2011 enrollment.
Mm.
However, we believe that as we go into 2014, we're beginning to see a growth upwards there of enrollment again. So you can see again, there's a lot one can talk about this thing here, but I don't have time on the chapter. You are going to ask me to be quiet and sit down in a moment. But you will see here that you can see here from grade 9. If you look at grade 9 compared to grade 12, you see the huge drop. But you see here a peak, an increase in grade 10. That's the repetition. That's because the grade 9 leave GET, they pass. But when they hit SET, they sit for the SET exam and assessment. And they don't program. So what they do is they repeat in grade 10. So grade 10 repeats is very high. But what happens is to go to grade 9 and write grade 12, there's a big drop. So in a sense, you can analyze enrollment from grade 10 to grade 12, or you can analyze it from grade 9 to grade 12, because that is an unusual peak because of the new assessment that kicks in from the SAT. That's a doctorate one can write on these things. But I just wanted to explain it very briefly to Honorable Makubola. Now, to answer your question specifically, yes, the trend is still more or less the same, point number one. Point number two is getting better. Point number three, it is not correct, like a lot of analysts do, and some of them are education analysts, but they still make the decision to use grade 1 data, for the reason I've indicated. The grade 1 over-enrollment has happened over the years, it continues to happen. Now, we can see the point I'm making. If you look at the ratio of grade 2 enrollment, three passes, this is what it was 2009 to going backwards. That's what it was in 2010, that's what it is in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
So it's getting better, that proportion.
Mm-hmm.
The question now is, what happens in 2012? This is what we judge ourselves. When we say we've got targets, people say we pass rate of tests. No, we're not pass rate of tests. We're obsessed on quality, progression, repetition, inequality, a whole lot of measurements.
Mm-hmm.
I thank you for the opportunity.
Chairperson, if I may, maybe my comment that may actually belong to a discussion one day. Because I think if we understand as a country and look at these numbers and look at the number enrollment in FET colleges increasing,
yeah.
We can't ignore that.
Yeah.
We can't ignore that. And I'm not very sure whether the department can factor this thing in, because at times we may think these people are lost. Some of them are definitely not lost.
Yeah.
They have taken a new career path. How difficult is it to get this data and factor them in? Because without them, and I've always been saying, but why do you talk as if there is only one route in the country?
Mm.
And then if people don't reach that, it means they are dead or they are lost or whatever.
If I can respond to that, absolutely. FET colleges. But also, when we look at that South Africa data, and we look at 18-year-olds, the enrollment of 18-year-olds in some form of education is fairly high. And if you look at it over the years, it's growth, which answers your question. It far exceeds grade 12.
Mm-hmm.
So they're somewhere. They're in FET colleges, but they're also in some form of training.
Mm-hmm.
So we must account for FET colleges, but we must also account for the teachers that we create. No, that's not FET colleges, but it's form of trade. Honorable Chair, you'll allow me, this slide here I think is also very, very important. It just shows grade 2 enrollment to matric passes, and this is an efficiency measure. It says how many, what is the percentage conversion between how many you enrolled in grade 2 and
are matric passes. And this is the 40% mark. You see, one of the best, well, the best performer is Gauteng Province. There. It's got 40%, it goes up, and yet in 2011, it's actually close to 60% conversion. So when we say 40% is being converted, it's not really true. If you look at this one here, that's Western Cape. They're sitting below Gauteng there, and almost tracking Gauteng on this basis here. The bottom one here is Eastern Cape, as usual. Mm-hmm. But let's just look at Limpopo there, the blue one. You look at Limpopo here. Look at Limpopo there. It has this drop. But look at Limpopo from 2009 to 2010 to 2011. You see, that's a significant one. Even Northern Cape. Remember, Northern Cape has a huge performance, and then they have a dip, and then it's getting better. So you've got to also distinguish between provinces. Look at Northwest, some nice performance there and so forth. So what happens is, Eastern Cape is a big province, and its conversion ratio is very low. 10% conversion ratio is very, very low. It impacts on the national average. But the picture across the country is very diverse, and some of the pictures don't look bad at all. You look at Limpopo there, a conversion ratio of what is that, about just under 40%. It's a poor province. And the latest research we're doing at the moment is showing that poor African learners in the country are best off in Limpopo. Mm-hmm. If you're turning the other way around, if you're a poor African learner, where are your chances maximum? Which school? It's the school in Limpopo, not a former Model T school. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, a historically African school where the majority African teachers in. That's the analysis we've done. The top 500 schools are schools of that description in the country.
That seems there's some good coming from the Bombo.
And I think that
in Bombo, whatever. Limpopo.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. There was a question that was raised by Honorable Bojana around WSD, the whole school evaluation.
Yes.
And let me start there by indicating that we have looked into what is it that ought to be done differently, because our provinces that I don't want to say where they were still, but they had a different view on around the issues of the officials that are assigned this particular responsibility in terms of where do they account. Second part was around the identification of schools. We have engaged the HEDCOM so that on this particular policy imperative, so that there is understanding on the implementation of policy. And we are very hopeful that when we report again, we'll be able to report be able to account for each and every problem. The second aspect talks to the question that was raised by Honorable Dina on what is it that we are doing around engaging higher education institution. Well, we've raised the matter at the National Teacher Education Forum with the Dean's Forum on content knowledge, practice and methodology. And we've seen a good turnout when we collaborated with the British Council, all the 23 higher education institutions participated in that particular initiative around the English first additional language. And we all concurred that this is the area that we ought to strengthen in our higher education institutions. So that's key and important. But we've seen their participation because they acknowledge this particular gap that is necessary. The other question that is around the quality management system that Honorable Chair raised. It's not only focusing on principals,
deputy principal is also focusing the instrument on the HOTs as well as the teachers. And we, it's also not, it will be done in a manner that ensures that you don't have teachers actually observing. It gives power to the principal who is responsible for that institution to actually do their respective jobs. This engagement, I think, has been very, very fruitful, so that in the institution based, which is a school in this instance, from principals, deputy principals, HODs, as well as teachers, they are instruments that we will be taking to ensure accountability for all. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The question that was asked by Honorable Smile, the concern that was raised on understanding for Program 2, I just want to indicate that spending on this program happens at a particular time. If you look at the allocation for this program, it's about 1.4 billion. And then all the two projects, Westbrooks and Karigude, they make up 1.38 billion. And as I indicated, the Westbrooks are being finalized and they'll be printed soon. So the payment will go through probably in the third quarter, not even in the second quarter. And then Karigude has started, as I indicated, and the stipends will be paid monthly from June or July, I'm not sure there. And then the legal costs, yes, they are included in the operational costs for Program 1. There is no specific project for legal costs, but there's an allocation for the legal services union. So that is included in the operational costs. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The beauty of having a more than capable DG is that it covers everything. And so most of us are really covered. Chair, just to add a few operational information. In terms of Karikude, because Comrade Gina also wanted to know, Honorable Gina.
You don't want to hear,
Comrade.
No, Honorable Gina. Honorable Gina also wanted to know as to whether we are making any progress.
No, we know all about deployment.
The mere slip of the tongue.
It's a Freudian slip.
My profuse apology. The cycle begins in June. Annually, up to the end of the full year, the next year, and then in terms of the target that was set is 4.7 million, and so far what has been covered is that in 2008, 360,000 were enrolled and went through. And then in 2009, it was 613,643. In 2010, it's 609,924. I don't have the 2011 figures. Just to indicate that they come out at ABET level 1, having completed ABET level 1, which means that they have to be absorbed at ABET level 2. Mm. What we have not succeeded in doing with DHET is to get them absorbed into ABET level 2, which is what we are doing at the moment in our engagement with them. Because many of them would complete and not know where to go. Some of them would choose to repeat.
the program again. And we also get them registered, I mean, registered on the National Learner Record Database, which is handled by SACO. So they are captured and recorded. Every time when they complete, they get captured in the National Learner Record Database. Coming back to the issue of curriculum coverage, we've introduced the curriculum coverage monitoring tool for the first time this year, Honorable Dikobo and Honorable Lovemore. The good thing is that at least wherever we go, we hear of the implementation of this instrument. The inherent risk with it is probable malicious compliance. Probable malicious compliance, getting teachers to complete the syllabus and leaving learners in terms of cognitive levels and skills and knowledge acquisitions behind. That's the risk that we are managing at the moment. And then to answer your question directly, our engagement with district and provincial officials, as well as the on-site monitoring that we do, and officials of DBE, DG, when the apology of Mrs. Kyobeka was tendered, DG indicated that Mrs. Kyobeka is managing the project of officials that are out to Limpopo and the Eastern Cape. So the on-site monitoring indicates that we have really moved in terms of curriculum coverage. The officials, line function officials from provinces, for instance, in terms of ANA, they've indicated that they are more than ready. The level of awareness is quite high, and learners and schools are ready to sit for the coming ANA in a few days. The same applies to the National Senior Certificate. Line function managers have indicated that they are ready. We don't only end with monitoring curriculum coverage from a desktop exercise, from the on-site evaluation. We also monitor special interventions, such as the winter schools, the spring school that is coming, so that we link the principle of value for money to the running of these interventions. So if you ask me whether from a curriculum point of view, are we ready or not, I would cautiously say that we are ready. But in future, we would like to run a system similar to exams, to have very clear, carefully selected indicators that would say to us, just at the tick of the clock, we can determine almost every school in every corner of the province in terms of curriculum readiness in respect of the end of the year assessment. So we are moving in that direction. I think it has taken quite a number of years for exams to develop the regime that they are managing, which is one of the best systems I think we're managing in the country. And then when it comes to textbooks, as a sector, we have set ourselves the end of October as the deadline for delivery of textbooks in all schools by all the 9 provinces. The DG has written letters to provinces that slightly went over the sector deadline of the end of October, requesting them to align their plans. It's almost a month or two ago now. Some of them in the last headcom indicated that they have aligned their plans. Our main worry is not with those provinces that have agencies to deliver on textbooks. Our main worry is around provinces that are managing the process on their own. Those that are using agencies, the system seems to be working quite well. But I can say that in the main, I think the provinces are in line to deliver in terms of the expected deadline. If they go over, it wouldn't be something that we are worried about, but we are managing that quite carefully. The DG has also written to provinces because we are monitoring the process every step of the way. The DG has now signed letters that said to PED, HODs, confirm that you have placed your order towards the end of August. We are waiting for the feedback to come in. We are meeting with publishers this coming week. We're monitoring provinces, we're monitoring publishers as well. In other words, we'll check with provinces, but at the same time, we'll confirm with publishers as to whether they have received orders that have been placed by various provinces. So I can really say that I think we're sitting quite I wouldn't say comfortable, but I say that there's nothing to worry about so far. We're managing the process every step of the way. Virtually every month the DG communicates with HODs through a record, a paper trail that we can trail. And then the DG has indicated that when it comes to funding for 2013 in Limpopo, that has been finalized with National Treasury. But in a way, DG also sort of to preempt, even for the catch-up plan, money has been secured through you, Chair, Honorable Lafmo. I'm sure all that needs to happen is ongoing reporting through the line, the systems that are there. Subject content training, it has happened. It's part of our monitoring through what we call NSLA, National Strategy for Learner Attainment, quarterly reports that have been coming through through all the provinces have indicated that specific content gaps have been addressed. And I must also indicate that provinces do this in various ways. Some provinces use universities also to address this. Some in-house through subject advisors and so on. So that has been addressed as well. From national level, we are talking about the big five. It's mathematics, it's physical science, it's accounting, it's geography, it's economics. The situation will vary as you delineate to provincial level. But at national level, we said you can't address your provincial specifics unless you address the top five, because that's what we see from the national radar. And the last one, DG and Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Honorable Kanyako, we've taken your advice. I was whispering to my colleagues that I know that we cannot leave this meeting without Honorable Kanyago raise the technical high school client. So I think the message is well received. We will follow up with the schooling in Poco, but the technical high school recap project is really intended to make sure that we close off that case.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. And very quickly, in terms of the issue relating to the question from the Honorable Makubela, with regard to our response time to challenges that may occur during the writing, I think what has happened is over the years, we in a sense have established what is it that can go wrong. And we've put in place clear protocols to deal with such problems that may occur. For example, in the case of power outages, policy clearly states that if the power does not return within 2 hours, then the exam must be rewritten. Now, there are two particular subjects where we are dependent on electricity. That's CAT and IT. So we already have a backup paper, and we already have a date, but we've not indicated that on the timetable, on which we will have an examination for candidates that may have confronted a problem with not having been able to complete the CAT and IT exam. So that backup process is there, and we're able to deal with that, and in like manner with other issues that may emerge. The issue of competency test, and a number of honorable members have raised that, and I think the point is taken that why are we emphasizing a teacher competency when it comes to marking? And yet the same teacher teaches and assesses. But I think the point is, we are all aware that teacher competency is an issue. And as a department, we have to start somewhere in terms of assessing teachers and addressing those content gaps. Now, given the high-stakes nature of the Grade 12 exam and the fact that this marker is, in fact, making a judgment on the learner's future, we think we can't compromise competency issues, and therefore it's implemented at that level. But the plan is that we would look at this kind of testing across the system. Now, why placement? And like I mentioned, that we are
piloting the competency test, and like DG mentioned, constructing any test is a major challenge, and particularly when you want to use the outcomes of that test to make a decision. And we're saying in the first year of implementation, do we want to be hard and fast and say that in 2012, the outcome of this competency test will determine whether you are a mark or not? And therefore we say, use the criteria, which are quite stringent, that are there already. And that criteria relates to qualification, experience, and even learner performance. And this now becomes an added criterion, which we say, and placement here is not a matter of one marking center to another, but rather what type of question this particular marker is given. If we find that your competency in terms of a particular knowledge area is poor, then we're not going to get you to mark that particular area. Or we may get you to mark an easier type of question, which may be multiple choice and fill in the blank. And I think that's the placement that we're talking about. And we say, being a pilot, we'll progressively move once we've kind of mastered the structure and the reliability of our test so that it's used specifically and clearly for selection purpose. The Western Cape Education Department, and why is it that they store question papers while others... Now, I think one needs to understand that the reason we decided for daily delivery is because not all our schools have strong rooms. And the Western Cape has continuously argued that all their schools have strong rooms and therefore they can store their question papers. But we are saying that in a national system, there has to be uniformity. And we can't have one particular province adopting an approach which is different. And despite the fact that they may have the storage facilities, but what we found happening in the case of Western Cape, and this has happened last year as well, because you have all question papers in the strong room, the chief invigilator, the principal, inadvertently will take the wrong question paper and open it on the day of writing. Instead of opening English home language paper 1, you open paper 2. So that's a compromise. And we pointed this out to the Western Cape Education Department, and therefore they've agreed that in 2030 they will pilot a daily delivery. But also what I want to do is allay the fears of the honorable members that schools that store question papers may be opening these question papers ahead of the examination date. I think what we need to understand is that all question papers are in security sealed bags. And those security bags must be opened in the exam room in the presence of the learners. So the learners must be satisfied that the seal has not been broken. So I think that's the way we kind of counteract this possibility. With regard to the Northern Cape and Limpopo, and what are we doing? Now, in the case of Northern Cape, and I understand that this will be discussed possibly at another session, but what I can say is that the grade 12 learners have been removed from the troubled area, and they are currently in a camp. There are 575 learners who have been taken through the grade 12 curriculum, and the report we received that they completed the syllabus, they're now busy with revision. There are only a group of about 51 learners, I think, that are in the Olifants Hoek area, where there are problems in trying to get those learners to the camp. But the province is doing the best it could to get those learners into the camp. And the plan is to also make sure that the examination is administered at this camp. So for the grade 12, we are fairly confident that, we will be able to manage the teaching and learning and the examination. In the case of Limpopo, we are aware that examinations may be compromised, but we are saying that we're going to deploy a team of monitors that will be based in each of the districts, particularly the distribution points where we think things may go wrong. And these monitors would be DBE officials, DBE appointed monitors to manage the conduct of the exam in like manner to their marking agencies. And then finally, Honorable Chair, have we tried to decrease the number of marking centers? Certainly. In fact, we had a dedicated session with our heads of exams, and we pointed out the concerns that come from the honorable members. Now, the challenge we face is that we do not have large enough venues to accommodate all markers.
And therefore, currently, for example, if you look at Gauteng, not Gauteng, but KZN, we utilize schools, and schools are utilized across most provinces, and schools cannot accommodate more than 200-300 markers, particularly where you need accommodation. But what we are looking at is the use of universities. But the problem with the universities is that they want to charge us an arm and a leg for the use of their facilities. And we believe that through the DG, we can enter into some kind of agreement with the universities that we charge the nominal fee, and therefore if we could use these larger institutions, we would certainly be able to minimize. Provinces have, for example, KZN has dropped from 31 to 29. So we are certainly looking at this, and I think we have a plan to minimize the number of marketing centers. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thanks for that. I don't think we have any follow-up because it's on 28 minutes past 5 already. But I think what we should do, this is what you have at the back of us. We'll have to discuss the enrollment, you know, and part of the committee. I think that's going to be important. Although we're not supposed to micromanage you, but there are certain things that we can discuss with you. Then the other is the meeting. We need to have a meeting staff with the department and the university. Not university, higher education and training. Just for our report back on what you have been discussing since April month. Because we'll tie up with what the Honourable Nina asked, you know, with the type of teacher that we get. And then it will also, and then something else I think that will be important. I don't know who was going to do it, but I think you need to speak to us about how do you train. So that you can, because when we were teaching, we used to teach from what is known to what is unknown. For example, like Lahava, transport. Then you'll take what is pertinent within that area to explain, you know, how it links up with the harbour, another harbour, the airport, etc. Yes. And then the other thing that I noticed, because I looked at my sister's granddaughter, we are not teaching, you know, like she can do everything, but when it comes to math, she's a goner. Although I look at the examples to help her, because she's staying now with me. You know, we're going to make more copies. Our children are not taught the function. I don't know why. There's something wrong. You know, because now we have to teach her how to add. Now we're teaching her the long way. And, you know, she don't know how to multiply. She'll know with small figures, but not big figures. So we'll have to just look at how are you doing your training. And then we have to save out, make sure about the rollover. To tell us, we received the rollover, and I think what's going to be important for the committee is understanding. Will you understand at the end of the financial year? Because I'm sure you'll be able to give us what you're in-year monitoring, you know, where you're going to pick up problems. Because, and tomorrow's a big meeting. Did you want to be present? Yes. Because I think tomorrow's a big meeting. Because they will speak to under extension all that, and we will have to reply to that. I would like to thank the members for coming to this meeting, and I think you find the meeting very interesting. But if the meetings were not interesting, you would not have been here like this morning's meeting, because our department had fruitless and wasteful expenditure this morning. By bringing in people through the meeting that did not materialize.
Which one?
Now I'm not going to say which meeting, the department or which meeting. And even higher education was present in that meeting, and it did not materialize. So that is fruitless and wasteful expenditure. But we have to see, you know, what are we going to do now in the future when you are called to meetings of other committees. Then we are going to have a meeting in DG. My secretary helps to arrange it. We're going to meet energy as a joint meeting. Energy is calling us in, that we can look at alternative energy for our school. And with, water will be present, that we can look at water.
And I think there was another thing that was asked in the meeting. We'll have to get to speak to the energy chairperson to get that our human settlement. Because here we are not moving together with human settlement. And you can see within the different provinces when it comes to the schools. We don't have enough schools. So let us leave it at that. And I'd like to, yes, sir.
Honourable Chair, I could take advantage of your list of joint sittings of portfolio committees. We've got a major problem in schools when it comes to the rates charged by municipalities.
That's how we're getting in.
That would be COCTA.
Yes, we're getting COCTA.
DCOC, yeah.
Yeah.
So we really appreciate that one. And we'll come prepared for it.
Yes.
Which
so
one?
There'll be
which
a big joint
cooperative government.
Because look at the rights of the municipality. The electricity, we bring in energy, plus COCTA, the electricity charges. And the rights to yes. Because, you know, they gave me a long explanation why don't they want to give people boxes. But they have to explain to us why is it like that. So I thank you for adding on to the list, because it was initiative of the energy chairperson. And it says it does bring in all role players, and it does sit together. And even if it's over a period of time, we have people in. You know, we look at all your problems within education. And thanks a lot, TG. And even the rest of the department. That's so, they are very loyal. But like I say, we have to leave you at home so that you can do your work. And I'll bring you to Cape Town. We'll tell you what's on the agenda for next week. Because remember, we said that we want to involve the combat to speak on that one. Thanks a lot.
You have to send
you must think.
Honourable Chair, honourable members, let me take this opportunity on behalf of the entire department to thank you very solemnly for your time and your questions and the oversight and the support that you provide. And also wish the honourable member a very happy birthday. May you have a good evening. We also apologise for sitting on this side of the room. I believe it was a faux pas. But we will make sure next time we sit on that side of the room. Thank you very much.
I'm going to go to the next one.